and call the meeting to order for the State of Arizona Board of Podiatry Examiners on September the 9th, 2020 at 8:33 a.m. I will go ahead and do voice roll call for board members just so we have that on record. So Heather has checked you off. Dr. Campbell's present. Dr. Foreman?
Present.
Dr. Ilano? Dr. Ilano?
Present.
Thank you. Mr. Rhodes?
Present.
And Heather Broaddus, our executive director, is present, as well as our attorney general. All right. So does anyone, we'll move on to number three. Does anyone have any conflicts of interest to declare any cases on the agenda today? All right. So, we do have a timed informal interview scheduled. We will then move on. 5A, this is an informal hearing for complaint 20-09-C for Dr. Cameron Farahani. We will follow protocol here. If you just give me a second. So it is now 8:34 a.m. on September the 9th, and pursuant to ARS 32-852.01, subsection D, this is an informal hearing regarding Cameron Farahani in the case number of 20-09-C. Will the licensee please come forward? We have Dr. Farahani has approached the table. And Dr. Farahani, are you represented today by legal counsel?
Yes, ma'am.
Could you please state your name?
My name is Dr. Cameron Farahani.
And could you please state the name and your attorney's name, and then we'll have your attorney introduce himself?
Mr. Robert Shelley.
This is Robert Shelley, attorney for Dr. Farahani.
Thank you, Mr. Shelley. I'm Dr. Barbara Campbell. I'm the president of the board, and I am a professional member. The other board members will now introduce themselves and indicate whether they are a public or a professional member. I'll start this.
I'm John Rhodes, and I am a public member.
Dr. Foreman?
Dr. Mark Foreman, I am a professional member.
Dr. Ilano?
Dr. Albert Ilano, professional member.
And as I've noted previously, we have our executive director, Heather Broaddus, present, as well as our Monahan. Dr. Farahani, you have received a notice informing you of the matters to be discussed today, the process for the informal hearing, and the possible actions the board may take. The purpose of this informal hearing is to inquire into facts and circumstances of the case and decide the outcome. We have read all the material submitted to us to date. We'll hear a brief overview of the case presented by our board investigator, Dr. Deidre Polakoff, and then we will interview you, as well as if the complainant is present on the telephone. We will also ask for a summary and may ask questions of the complainant. So if you have any questions for the board or anyone providing information during the interview, you may ask them through me. If you would prefer not to participate in this informal hearing, you can indicate so now, and we will direct this matter to a formal hearing. Proceeding is being recorded to provide a record. Everyone must speak loudly and clearly, and please only one person speaking at a time. And again, reminder to keep, when you are not speaking, to keep your telephone on mute. So Dr. Polakoff, would you please give us a brief summary of the case?
Yes, ma'am. This is Dr. Deidre Polakoff on case 2009C, Cameron Farahani. The complainant, patient GB, initiated a complaint against Dr. Farahani for concerns of billings for items that she did not receive. GB submitted invoices from the doctor. She never had any injections, which the medical records indicate that she had on 10 visits. She states that she had high energy shockwave treatment, but she did not receive injections. She never received a written consent or verbal permission for the procedures as it is stated in the medical records. She never had any casting for custom orthotics. She reports or ever received any orthotics. On 9/10/2019, the doctor's office called GB to cancel the visit, she reports, and rescheduled her for 9/17/19. There are billing statements from the treatment of 9/10/19. Two allegations are present. Allegation number one, falsifying medical records and billing records. Allegation number two, billing for shoe inserts that she never received. The doctor had a narrative response submitted stating that GB was referred as a personal injury case from her attorney. The allegations contained in the complaint are likely an attempt by GB and her attorney to leverage Dr. Farhani into accepting a reduced amount of compensation for the services provided to GB. The invoice submitted by GB was specifically requested by GB's attorney to use in settlement negotiations with the insurance company. The attorney representing Dr. Farhani sent a letter stating that anesthesia, GB, a layman, mistakes the CPT code 64450 with being given anesthesia. GP was given a PT block by means of a local anesthetic prior to shockwave therapy. The CPT code used is a generalized code for application of anesthetic topically and or through an injection. Consent for treatment of GB states that she never signed a consent for the treatment, but she executed a general consent for treatment on 7/9/19 when she initiated treatment with Dr. Farhani. Casting for custom orthotics. Her foot was placed in a foam box on 8/27/19. The orthotics were received in the office. They were made full length. The patient requested sulcus length, and the orthotics were returned to the lab for the modification to sulcus length. In the review of the medical records, each of the 11 visits were almost identical. Four pages of medical records. The first three pages were a review each time. Each time they state that vital signs were not taken. In the fourth page of each dictation, the report states that vital signs are intact. Each visit states that ESWT treatment was performed with administration of Marcaine in a PT block of 0.5% Marcaine plain, 5 cc's. Shockwave therapy was performed, and the patients had a consent form for this procedure signed at each visit for 10 visits. Between 7/16/2019 and 8/27/2019, the dictations were all duplicates, all receiving the PT block, all receiving a consent form with signature. None of the consent forms were in the chart. The diagnosis on 10/7/19 was arthrosis, peroneal tendonitis, posterior tibial tendonitis, chondral injuries of the left knee, effusion of knee, infrapatellar bursitis, injury of knee, motor vehicle accident, hallux rigidus, ganglion cyst, Achilles tendonitis. The patient was given a cam walker on her first visit. The cam walker was discontinued 2 months later. An MRI was performed, which had a diagnosis of first MTP joint moderate arthrosis, mild midfoot arthrosis, no acute fracture or dislocation, 1 centimeter synovial ganglionic cyst at the dorsal second tarsal metatarsal joint, midfoot mild arthrosis, no acute fracture or dislocation, perineal and distal posterior tibialis tendinitis, tendinosis, no acute fracture or ligament tear, distal Achilles grade 1 tendinosis. Recommended treatment by Dr. Farhini was 10 treatments of ESWT, the shockwave therapy, with each treatment injection of the marcaine. Both oral and written consents obtained after reviewing the procedure each visit. The patient was brought into the procedure room in the office and placed in the supine position in preparation for the administration of anesthesia. Anesthesia was obtained with a PT block and 5 cc's of 0.5% marcaine. Coupling gel was then applied to the treatment surface, and the therapy head was placed in contact with the skin. ESWT was initiated at 14 kilovolts. A total of 2,000 pulses were administered to the patient. On 2/26/20, DME dispensing orthotic sheet was sent to the attorney's office. The patient then sought treatment of Dr. J. Larson, who ordered physical therapy for a diagnosis of Achilles tendinitis. She was advised to return to her regular activities and pain to palpation of the posterior aspect of the heels at the Achilles tendon was noted as some tenderness. She submitted all bills for both Dr. Farhini's treatments and Dr. Larson's. Financials. On 7/9/19, initial office visit of 99204 with a fee of $1,640 was not substantiated by the medical records. A Cam Walker was dispensed, L4361, with a fee of $2,931.17. Extracorporeal shockwave therapy, 28890 for a fee of $1,050. Injection, marcaine, a peripheral nerve block, 64450 with a fee of $250. Duplicate fees were then following for 10 visits for 7/16/19 through 8/20, and again through a completion of 9/10/19. On 9/17/19 was the patient's last visit for $720.68, 99213. All visits of 99214 and 99213 were not substantiated by the medical records. They were problem-focused visits, as opposed to an ENM code of a level 3 or level 4. The balance of the treatments of 11 shockwave therapies and an office visit was $28,374. A GB states that she never received an injection from Dr. Farhani. She never received a consent form for each of the 10 shockwave therapies. She never received the orthotics or the brace that she was promised. She did end up getting a brace on Amazon. I did ask her where the brace was positioned because in the doctor's notes, it mentioned dispensing of brace, but for what reason, it did not state. The patient stated that she was under the impression it was a knee brace that she was going to receive, and the orthotics. The MRI results were a grade 1 tendinosis, no acute ligament tear, no acute fracture, a 1 centimeter synovial ganglion cyst as a dorsal second tarsal metatarsal joint region. The impression was perineum distal posterior tibial tibialis tendinosus, no acute fracture or dislocation, no ligament tear, first MTP joint moderate arthrosis, mild midfoot arthrosis, a 1 centimeter synovial ganglion cyst at the dorsal second tarsal metatarsal. The Dr. Farahini states that the patient was treated accordingly with shockwave ESWT, high-energy nerve blocks, immobilizing via camwalker, and anti-inflammatory. The doctor firmly believes that such injuries endured by the patient are directly and 100% related to the events that occurred on 6/17/19, the motor vehicle accident, any of which could have been avoided, prevented, if the motor vehicle accident had not occurred. Any of which could have been avoided, prevented, if the motor vehicle accident, again, had not occurred. Without such treatment during the course of visit, the rupture of the Achilles tendon would have been imminent, requiring surgical intervention, and not to mention the increased re-rupture rate. I was able to control such symptoms with above ESWT nerve block, camwalker, and anti-inflammatory, such therapies during the course of treatment, and prevent the need for surgical intervention. The allegations, number one, falsifying medical records for treatments that were not performed. The patient records indicated 11 treatment visits. Each treatment I reported were approximately 4 pages long, and each is almost a duplicate of the previous treatment. The record states that the patient was casted for orthotics via phone box on 8/27/19. GB states that she never received the inserts. The patient was under the impression that she was going to receive a knee brace for the right knee. In regards to the ESWT treatment, the medical record states, again, that ESWT performed this visit, both oral and written, consents obtained after reviewing the procedure each visit. These were not in the chart, and the patient denies ever signing for treatment. The reports also state, again, that the injection was given. The patient denies ever receiving an injection. The attorney wrote that an injection was given via a topical anesthetic. Dr. Farahini clearly writes that an injection was given in his notes. Allegation number two, the financial statements reviewed that this is a motor vehicle accident. The visits do not justify billings for the 99204 or 99213 visits. Documentation does not fulfill the justification for a level 3 or 4 E&M code. This is a problem-focused dictation, not even counting the 95% plus duplication of records. The billing profile was excessive for each item billed. Bills were submitted upon each ESW visit for the code 64450. According to the AMA CPT Reference Guide 2019, code 64450, injection, anesthetic agent, other peripheral nerve or branch. There is no reference to a topical application. 64450 specifically states injection. Conclusion, there were a lot of duplicate records which did not complement the patient's care. No vital signs, but the notes state vital signs were stable after each ESW treatment. No consent forms in chart. The treatment was according to the MRI grade 1 tendinosis, no acute ligament tear, no fracture, but the doctor mentions potential Achilles rupture. Peroneal and distal posterior tibialis tendinosis. In conclusion, I have substantiated both allegation number one and allegation number two for the complaint 20-09C against Dr. Cameron Farahani from patient GB. Thank you.
Does anyone have any questions for Dr. Polakoff, board members? Dr. Ilano or Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for Dr. Polakoff?
Dr. Polakoff?
Yes, sir.
So Based upon, this is Dr. Foreman, based upon the notes and the response of the complainant, so there was no injection ever given, even though it was documented in the charts?
That is correct, for 10 times documented.
Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Polokas, this is Dr. Ilano. For your experience, the level codes that was used, 99204 and 99213, upon reading of the charts, what level do you think is substantiated, Dr. Harani?
With the duplication of records and the problem-focused identification of each visit, this is a 99202 visit. If he would have put in items such as her age, let's say a 50-year-old Caucasian female, well-nursed, well-developed, presenting with a limp to the right side, fetal pulses presented, this visit are consistent with prior visits of plus 2 over 4, plus 1 over 4, but make it specific for each visit. The duplication of records has caused a downcode of this chart, and the documentation does not substantiate any other than a problem-focused 99202.
In regards to the injection or non-injection that was performed by Dr. Farahani, what led you to believe that the injections should have been performed, or the code indicates injections should have been performed?
Shockwave therapy is a great treatment for a lot of ligament and tendon problems, but shockwave therapy is painful. You're getting 2,000 kilovolts pounding the area. Prior to having the mobile machines that are available now, 10 years ago, you had to put a patient in the hospital, give them an anesthetic that was not a local, but maybe sedation or a general, just to do the shockwave therapy. It was that painful. With the local anesthetic, it is more tolerable, but having the traditional shockwave therapy, I cannot see a topical anesthetic for this procedure.
Dr. Polokas, Dr. Foreman again. I do have a question. When we were just doing the shockwave therapy, should there be a visit with that if it's coming in just for a procedure code?
No.
Okay.
There should not. And there were no modifiers used. If he had something that was new, changed, improved, something that needed an ENM procedure code with a modifier, that would have been appropriate. But that was not this case.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Milano, did you have another question?
No, I also saw the billing. There was a billing for the orthotics at the time of the casting. Is that appropriate?
I'm having a hard time understanding you, Dr. Ilano. Could you slow down and enunciate a little bit more? It's kind of, sure. Our connection wasn't good.
Okay, sure. On the note, I saw that there was a billing for the orthotics at the time of cancer. Is this appropriate, or should it be billed after the patient received the orthotics?
Dr. Ilano, I do understand the question. The I think we're getting a big echo. The orthotics were billed, and the patient did not receive the orthotics, but according to Dr. Farahani, they were given to her attorney's office. So I am not sure of the current status of the orthotics.
My question was more on the lines of I noticed that he billed the orthotic at the time of the casting. Would it be appropriate to bill it at the time of the casting or when the patient receives the orthotic itself?
It is more typical of our practitioners to bill orthotics at the time of receipt of the orthotics. It is noted in the chart that the nurse did give the patient the orthotic instruction sheet, which was sent to the attorney's office. The patient denies ever receiving an orthotic instruction sheet or the orthotics. As to the billing, I do not believe that the patient should have been billed for the orthotics because she did not receive the orthotics, but the doctor did, according to his notes, dispense the orthotics. So that's why I still have a question about that, and I'm leaving that one open because the doctor sent them with the assumption that they will be received. The patient did not receive them.
Thank you, Dr. Polakoff.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Dr. Polakoff. Do we have the complainant on the line, Heather?
This is Heather Broaddus. Is GB the complainant for this case on the phone? She indicated she would be.
Okay, well, since she's not here, we'll move on then. Dr. Farhani, I'd like you to raise your right hand and we'll place you under oath. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony that you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Okay.
Thank you. Would you like to make a brief opening statement? Pardon me, Dr. Farhani. Someone just chimed in.
Hi, this is Heather Broaddus. Did somebody just join the conference call?
Yes, ma'am.
Is this GB?
My name is Elizabeth. I'm an ASU student.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Farhani. If you would like, you could make your opening statement, or your counsel can also correct.
This is his attorney, Robert Shelley. I'm going to make a brief statement. Thank you. There's just a couple clarifications. We submitted a supplemental response, which the board should have received last week. A couple of the responses to some of the board members' questions should have been answered in that, so I guess I would direct you to read that if you haven't yet. I just want to address a couple things about GB's statements. GB contends that she never visited his office on September 10th, and I know initially in the medical report that there was a discussion of the signatures. So, in support of us saying that she did come to that appointment, I obtained an affidavit from his receptionist, who's a registered nurse, and she confirmed that GB was there on that date. Additionally, I took all of the signatures, one from that date, and put them all together so that the board members can review them, and they look exactly the same. I don't know how anyone could view those and think that there was a difference. And the contention that we would submit a falsified sign-in sheet is ridiculous and offensive, to be honest. Second, as far as the orthotics and the brace, GB contends she didn't receive them, which she hasn't, but I contacted her first personal injury attorney where Dr. Farahani's office dropped off those devices to, and I attached that email in our response, and he confirms that on February 26th, his office did receive those devices and that they contacted GB on multiple occasions, which she has ignored, and the device still sits in his office to this day. And as you recall, GB, submitted false testimony by saying that the casting was never even done for those devices. She never received them. She received no word of them. And that's demonstrably false. In regard to the excessive fees, we submitted a fee analyzer from Optum, which shows that although, yes, the fees were on the high end of the scale, they were within the range of fees charged. And then, as I've stated in the last three responses, this invoice has never been submitted to an insurance company. It was never submitted to GB for payment. Nothing has ever been collected from her. This was sent at the request of the attorney to use in settlement negotiations with the insurance company. And so any of the CPT codes, the excessive charges, any of that is moot because, as you know, there are definitions in the statute as far as what is unprofessional conduct. And in this case, you know, the direct quote is, either a charge or collection of unreasonable fees, and he is neither charged nor collected either of those. Lastly, it's absolutely clear that Dr. Farahani did not document, as he should have. He admits that. We're not contending that his notes are perfect. They're not. There are things that he needs to work on, but there are a lot of different things in this case, and I would, prefer to focus more on the things that he can improve upon instead of trying to parse the, I would consider, false statements submitted by the complainant. And then I also want to say, I was contacted by her third personal injury attorney last week asking for another settlement. As I said at the beginning, I believe this was clearly leveraged to reach some kind of reduced settlement. And I believe this is her third personal injury attorney in the last, 6 months now. And that contention still stands. I think it's clear what she's attempting to do. Anyway, that's all I have to say. I'm going to open up questioning for Dr. Farahani. Thank you.
Dr. Farahani, do you have a statement you want to make in addition?
I'm happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Shelley, just Dr. Campbell, I did appreciate your supplement, and so that I certainly was aware of the affidavit from Dr. Farahani's RN and all the other indications. And while it's not the issue of this board about how the personal injury stuff came about and how those connections were made, but we'll start then with questions. One more comment, Mr. Shelley. The fact that there may have never been a bill submitted, Dr. Farahani still made a contract with a patient to give care. So when you made a comment that anything having to do with coding and such was a moot point, but I respectfully disagree with that statement, that Dr. Farahani is licensed by the state of Arizona, not by an insurance company and not by the Arizona Bar. So with that comment, we'll move on to other questions for Dr. Farahani. Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for Dr. Farahani?
Yes, Dr. Farahani is Dr. Foreman. The one question I have is, did you give any posterior tibial nerve blocks with an injection or just a topical anesthetic?
Dr. Foreman, I have used extracorporeal shockwave therapy since essentially starting residency in New York. And the same code, the CPT code, and this introduction of anesthetic was used all throughout my residency. This is all I have learned and mastered by my previous role model. I never stated that I gave GB an injection, and I probably could have done a better job writing in my note that. But I remember Dr. Polakoff mentioned that the 64450 is an injection of anesthetic agent, nerve block diagnostic, or therapeutic procedure of somatic nerves. However, she failed to mention there is one word before that. It says introduction / injection of anesthetic agent. So, with all due respect, sir, this is what I have known. This is what I have used. As Dr. Polakoff agrees that maybe 10 years ago, these patients have to go to a surgical suite or the hospital to be able to get these extracorporeal shockwave therapy. But the newer machines are hybrid machines, which is allows them to be used as in-office procedures, but still doesn't take away the discomfort prior to the administration of this machine. So therefore, I don't know if you have, or any of my colleagues right now have ever done, there's no way you can administer whether regular or hybrid or high energy shockwave to a bare skin without presence of some sort of an anesthetic. And previously I submitted to this board with Mr. Celli an article that states that topical anesthetics more often are used now in different branches of medicine. And so I use a 2 ounce original blue gel, which each of those 2 ounces cost about $75. It consists of lidocaine 4%, tetracaine 2%, and I actually, based on what I have learned from residency, we added 5 cc of 0.5% marcogaine to that mixture, to the blue gel, and then we applied it about 5 to 10 minutes prior to the commencement of the shockwave therapy. And then after about 5 minutes, I walk into the room and I add the gel and start administrating the shockwave. But without any of that, there is no way that you can, it's just too painful, especially for somebody like GB who had peroneal tendonitis, posterior tibial tendonitis, and Achilles tendinosis.
Okay, so in your notes, it doesn't say injection. It just says a PT block with 5 cc's of 0.5% marcogaine.
Yes, sir.
Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Ilano?
Hi, good morning, Dr. Pawrani. Have you done any more personal injury cases after or prior to this?
This was my second personal injury case, sir, and I just brought up to Heather Broaddus. Unfortunately, due to COVID, I had to close down my practice and start looking for jobs elsewhere. So, no, I have not, and I will not take any more personal injury cases because I accepted the fact that I wanted to help patients by putting them on lean because something that other practitioners may not want to do. And as you know, it's been about 12 months since the termination of that, and I have not gotten paid a cent. And the emotional thing that I had to go through for the past 6 months and bring it up upon my family, my two-year-old, and also paying a fee for counsel, it just, to me, it's not worth it, sir.
Okay. I have no further questions.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ilano. Mr. Rhodes, sir. Um, At this point, I do not have any other questions. I personally do not have any other questions for Dr. Farahani, but I would like to make a motion to move into executive session for purposes of receiving legal advice.
Okay.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. Okay. Dr. Foreman and Dr. Ilana, we will go into the conference room, and then we will contact you on your cell phones.
Okay. Talk in a little bit.
Perfect, Dr. Cohn. Thank you for letting us know.
Okay.
That's great.
No problem. It's just
okay.
It starts at 9:30 and spoke for an hour. So
alrighty.
I'll call back in as soon as I finish.
Okay.
Thanks.
Just let us know what you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks.
I'll call back to you.
Okay, great.
Hi, this is Heather Broaddus. Can I confirm that Dr. Ulano and Dr. Foreman have joined the call?
Dr. Foreman.
Hi, Dr. Foreman.
And Dr. Ulano here.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
All right, so we will note that we are back on record at 9:23 a.m. In the informal interview for Dr. Farahani. All right. So everybody's asked questions. We've heard from Dr. Farahani and his attorney, and there have been no other witnesses that Dr. Farahani has asked, and everybody, I believe, has asked their questions. Do you have anything else you'd like to say, Dr. Farahani?
No, other than this past 7 months, it's just been really rough on me and my family. That's all. Because it's just not something I expected to do. I wanted to help the patient out by treating them, by making sure that I didn't ask for any money up front, whether I respect Mr. Rhodes very much. But, you know, I went to seminars. I went to my other colleagues who do personal injury, and everybody recommended that book to me. And I use that book as, maybe it's not the great book, maybe, I don't even know, but my intention was not to ill will or anything.
Whoever's got, turn your phone off mute, please, we're getting a lot of back noise. Thank you so much. Yeah, I appreciate that. I think, personally, that those personal injury cases put you in a very bad spot.
I think
I don't think that, you know.
If I may, I think the emotions that are involved with this case and not sleeping at night, always worrying what's going to happen because this is my livelihood and this is how I get to support my family. And I think, to me, that is the worst punishment I've ever endured.
Well. Well, you know, and the more we've talked about all this and heard and seen, you know, I think there's a lot of misinformation and misrepresentation by the other party. And we're, you know, as we go through that, like I said, we're finding more and more that doesn't jive, it's not making sense. And obviously, you know, as your attorney has said, that you talked about your documentation and things like that. So, you know, initially when we're going into this, we had a list of all these different things that we thought, you know, would be what we would consider, you know, violations and things. And so I think I'm leaning more towards the fact of something, a non-disciplinary type of action where you obviously are aware of how the coding and the different levels of documentation that you have to have for coding and such, and also on, you know, just good documentation in general that presents what you actually did for the patient, a kind of a note that somebody else could pick up and read, and they know exactly what happened without, you know, any question and having good completeness. So I'm of the inkling that, you know, non-disciplinary, where maybe we, you know, doing some continuing education to beef up on the latest with billing and coding, and then doing some, maybe a letter of concern in regards to the use of the proper use of those codes. So I'd like to hear from my fellow board members what their feelings are.
I'm looking at coding and documentation and letter of concern, and I'd like to say I've kind of been in your position, and it's cost me tens of thousands of dollars for someone that's made allegations against me and had to work it out and make things right. So,
well, Mr. Rose, if I didn't have a family and if I didn't have a kid, that would be totally different, but my family suffered a lot in the past 7 months.
Dr. Yolano, were you starting to say something also?
Sure. I second the motion for a non-disciplinary letter of concern in a CME building.
Well, I haven't made a motion just yet. I just would like yours and Dr. Norman's opinions or comments, please.
I would agree to take that path.
Okay.
This is Dr.
Hello?
Say hello.
Hello? Hi, this is Heather Broaddus. May I ask, is this GB?
This is GB. I've been here ever since 8:30.
Well, we asked if you were there, and you did not twice, and you did not make a remark that you were ready to speak. So
is my phone now. My son has his phone, and it wasn't working, so we had to change it.
Ma'am, we've been through the process. We're doing our deliberation. We've already began to dispose the case.
I have been listening to you. I have been listening to you since when it started.
But ma'am, I asked you twice if you would like to speak. We did not get any response. So the assumption was you were not there to participate, and we moved forward with protocol. And that's where we are. So we are, like I said, we're in the middle of deliberation, and I am ready to offer my motion that we offer for Dr. Farahani, case 20-09-C, under heading of a letter of concern. Pardon me.
Is it Heather? Heather, this is JB, and I've been here all this time.
Yes, JB, this is Heather Broaddus. You can contact me after the meeting, but now is not the time for you to speak. Now is the board's time.
Fine.
Okay, pardon me. So we're back on for my motion that we offer Dr. Farahani regarding case 20-09-C, a letter of concern regarding the proper use of billing codes 99204, 99213, and 99214. And in addition to that, I would request for a non-disciplinary CME order for, let's say, 6 hours regarding documentation and medical records. And of course, those CMEs are in addition to the 25 that is required each year for relicensing, and that they are pre-approved by the board.
And can he do those online?
Yes, of course, yes. All that can be done online, yes, as that's what is occurring these days. And that doctor is responsible for any fee that's obviously. So do I have a second?
Second.
Any other discussion on that? Okay, we will take a voice vote on this order. Dr. Yolano?
Aye.
Dr. Foreman?
Aye.
Mr. Rhodes?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell? Aye. It's been moved and seconded and unanimously passed for non-disciplinary CME and a letter of concern for Dr. Farahani in case 20-09-C. Thank you, Dr. Farahani.
Do you need that book? Pay $200 for it.
I'll give it back.
If you want, you can have it. I can order another one.
No.
She was going to use it for.
No, thank you. All righty.
Okay.
Okay. All righty. Okay. So we will take a 5-minute break before we begin our next section, which is on the investigative files. So we'll take 5 minutes. And Heather, that'll give us time to call Dr. Steck.
I'm on the line.
To him about 9:30. Oh, is that he on the phone?
Dr. Steck, are you on the conference call?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so we will be back in about 5 minutes, and then we'll get to your cases.
Heather?
Sounds good.
Yes.
Sorry, this is Brenna with Kent Law Group. Are Dr. Dershowitz's cases going into session, and are we waiting for Dr. Cohen to get back?
Yeah, so if you would like, you can call back in about 10:30, because Dr. Cohn did indicate that he would not be back until about 10:30.
But no, isn't one of Dr. Cohn's cases?
Heather?
Oh, you know what? There is one case that is being reviewed by Dr. Steck was the investigator, so.
We can take that one.
We can take that one first after this 5-minute break.
Okay. Sorry. Hey, Heather?
Yes.
Yeah, Heather, hi. This is Dr. Glossinger. I was just wondering if my case is coming up next, or I'm just trying to figure out when I'm supposed to go see patients and when I need to be back in here.
So after this 5-minute break, we are going to go to one complaint, and then yours will either be next or the one following. So we'll probably get to yours within the next 30 minutes.
Okay. Thank you. That helps.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Any other questions?
Yes. Oh, you're not kidding. Please. Dr. Steck, you're there, right?
I am here. Yes.
Dr. Dershowitz, you're there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Great, okay. And how about Ms. Gingrich?
I am here.
Thank you. Okay, so Dr. Steck is the investigator, so I will ask Dr. Steck to give us his report, please.
Okay, thank you. This complaint is filed by Ross Goldberg on behalf of his friend, the patient, E.T. Allegations include the doctor, staff, and patients in the office not practicing social distancing, no wearing of masks during the current pandemic. The patient is immunocompromised and asked the doctor to wear a mask, but he removed it to talk to her. Also, nursing staff did not wear a mask. The patient had a nail procedure at the visit without complication. The allegation is not wearing a mask or maintaining social distancing in the current pandemic. Attorney Kimberly Kent communicates with the board on behalf of Dr. Dershowitz. She points out that there is not intake information from the patient that she is immunocompromised. Furthermore, there's limited seating in the waiting room due to removal of furniture in attempts to follow proper social distancing. Front desk people are behind the glass and behind barriers, so they do not wear masks. The doctor did not have a mask on for the exam, but claims he was more than 6 feet from the patient. Nurses were not wearing masks, but were about 20 feet from the patient. When the MA came in to dress the wound, she had a mask on. The office has had issues with PPE being stolen and are protected and not out in the open. Here's Purell for patients to use. The complainant was not at the appointment. My medical records review show that the doctor properly documents a new patient visit on 5-7-20, obtains informed consent for the nail procedure. The doctor does add an addendum on the day of her visit shortly after the initial consent. This states that the patient left the appointment without making a post-op, and the patient asked the doctor to wear a mask, which he did. The conclusion was the alleged violation was not following proper masking and social distancing regulations. It found that this was unsubstantiated. The complainant was not present at the time of service, and the actual events of that day are difficult to decipher. As of June 20th, 2020, according to the Maricopa County and corroborated with the Paradise Valley website, which is included below, masks should be worn in enclosed and public spaces, and it is a county regulation that the office wear masks. The encounter in question was prior to this date, and the office should follow the current regulations as of June 20th of this year.
Thank you, Dr. Steck. Do any of my board members have any questions for Dr. Steck?
No.
And do you, Mr. Rhodes? No, I agree with Dr. Steck's assessment, because we all are aware during this whole pandemic time there have been recommendations all over the place with masks and changes here and there and everywhere. So I will make a motion, but a reminder I would indicate to practitioners and Dr. Dershowitz, just make sure you're following really the most recent of the CDC guidelines, and guidelines that are by city, state, and local guidelines, because they're all different, pretty much different in different locations around the state. So as with this information that was presented and our report from Dr. Steck, I will make a motion to dismiss case 20-10-C, citing that there were no violation of state statutes.
Second.
Any discussion? Any further discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Thank you.
All right, thank you. So then I will call, I'll call back at 10:30 when Dr. Cohen returns. Is that the plan?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, perfect. Okay, see you then. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All righty. Then we have our next case then that is for Dr. April Glessinger. That is case 20-5-C. And that case is investigated again by Dr. Steck. Dr. Glessinger is on the phone. No complainant on the phone, correct, Heather? Thank you so much. So we will go ahead and have Dr. Steck give his investigating report.
Patient NB is a 39-year-old female that saw Dr. Glessinger on 1-26-18 for an ingrown toenail and plantar fasciitis. At the time of service, she had an ingrown nail removed, a female procedure, and treated for plantar fasciitis. Patient alleges that she had an infection, possibly due to the doctor not having proper ointment. We did get an antibiotic from her primary care provider after she saw the doctor who subsequently performed repeat exploration and an additional phenol procedure. The patient went on to heal. The patient was also treated successfully with custom orthoses for plantar fasciitis. The patient returned to the doctor's office on 1-23-20 for her second pair of orthoses. She paid for the orthoses, which was a total of $500, half at the time of the order, and the other half was to be collected when she picked them up. After her insurance was billed, the patient was owed $62.78. The patient is concerned that the refund was not given in a timely manner and had a difficult time communicating with the office. The allegation is not recognizing an infection after nail removal and untimely return of a refund. A summary of the licensee's written response to the allegations. The patient was seen on 1-26-18 a nail removal and recommended orthoses was done. On 2-13-18, patient was seen in follow-up and she had stopped cleansing the wound after 1 week. There was no gross infection and the orthotics were dispensed. Almost a month later, the patient was seen for follow-up for pain at an ingrown nail procedure site. There was local erythema and re-exploration of the area that was again performed. The patient did not keep her follow-up appointment. The orthotics appeared to be working well for her plantar fasciitis. And almost 2 years later, the patient returns to the office to have new orthoses made. She again signed a custom orthotic agreement, which was supplied. Outlining the process for the orthotic process. Again, she paid the first of the two $250 fees. On February 5th of this year, the patient came in for orthotic dispensing and paid the second $250 fee. She wanted her refund at that time, but the office explained, as stated in the orthotic agreement, that it is usually 4 to 6 weeks from this time that she would receive the refund. The patient was upset that the refund would not be sent, but that the office policy was she needed to come to the office to pick it up. And the last communication with the office that I'm aware of was in March 6th of this year, where the patient called and was upset, wanting her refund. Excuse me. In the medical records review, the patient had what appeared to be an unremarkable nail procedure. She was seen a week later. There was no gross infection. Her follow-up, almost a month later, there was local erythema, and the patient was recommended to have another nail procedure done with re-exploration. The patient did not keep her follow-up appointments for the infected toenail. The subsequent visits, previously outlined, the patient came in again almost 2 years later. Her initial orthoses had worked well, and she followed it appeared to be the same protocol as before for the fee and dispensing of the orthotics. I did speak with Dr. Glessinger. She felt that the protocol outlined in the signed orthotic disclosure was clear. The patient had been through this once before. The orthotics clearly helped the patient, and she came back for a second pair. I did ask about the policy of not giving refunds by mail and only in person. She said that she would look into this and feels that she would at least look into that and see if that needed to be revised. I did attempt to speak with the patient on three separate occasions. She has little kids, and I was just unable to speak with her. Allegation number one is not recognizing an infection after nail removal. I feel this is unsubstantiated. The doctor saw the patient 2 weeks after the nail removal and documents no sign of infection. She did not keep her scheduled other follow-up appointments. The patient returned 5 weeks later, and at that point there were signs of infection and possible nail spicule, which the doctor then explored and did repeat procedure. Allegation number two, untimely return of refund. After speaking with Dr. Glessinger, I believe his practice will likely be changed or at least looked into to allow mail refunds for more convenience of the patients in similar circumstances. I did receive communication from Heather after the case about one of the board members did not see consent forms for the nail procedures, and that was additionally communicated with Dr. Glessinger, which she provided response for.
All right. Do any of my board members have questions for Dr. Steck, Dr. Foreman?
No questions.
Dr. Yolano?
I have no questions at this time.
Mr. Rhodes?
No questions.
So, yeah, because on the issue of the consent, Dr. Steck, I noticed that, you know, it's in the documentation, it said that surgical consent was discussed and signed, and like I said, not in the chart. And I have concern on that because it is a surgical procedure. The code 11750, a matrixectomy, is a surgical code. And according to with our state statutes, one must have a, you know, you must consent for surgery. And I know the response that we got from Dr. Glessinger, which we will discuss with her about the non-necessity of written consents for nail surgeries. Anyway, also too, I noticed on the billing, there is, I don't see modifiers, so I don't know. When we look at her billing stuff, we have codes, but there is no modifier on the matrixectomy, and on the new patient visit here, we don't have the 25 modifier that's a lot of times used in connection with that initial, just to make sure the insurance company understands that. Plus, on the billing for the orthotics, we just have the L3000, but no indication of the right and the left, which is proper coding. So, like I said, we don't have any EOBs. We don't have any HICPA forms to see, you know, if those were on, you know, if those were properly applied, those modifiers were properly applied on that. So that's, again, something that we can discuss with Dr. Glessinger. So at this time, if nobody else has any other questions or comments for Dr. Steck's report, I will ask Dr. Glessinger to give her summary. Oh, do we have the complainant is not present. Okay. We asked that prior, but I thank you. I would ask again, the complainant's initials would be NB. Heather, there has not been anybody that might not. So thank you for attending, Dr. Glessinger. So we will ask for your summary. Hello?
Hi. Yeah, I don't really have anything to add to Dr. Steck's summary. I think he did a complete job of the events in order. Unless anybody has any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer those.
Yes, Dr. Glessinger, it's Dr. Campbell. I'm just really curious as to the seminar that you attended that indicated that you said back in 2018 where it's not necessary to have written consent on a nail procedure, which is a surgical procedure.
I don't remember. I go to quite a few seminars, but I usually go to AAPPM and usually the APMAs and then the ACFAS, what I typically attend. And they had said that an in-office procedure like this doesn't require surgical consent, and that just for bunionectomies and things of that nature, that they would recommend we continue to do surgical consents. So I'm not sure at which point we began to phase them out, but I always go through verbally all my consent with the patient, regardless of whether or not I have them sign something. It's always reviewed and understood.
So this, you said either APMA or American College of Foot and Ankle Surgeons. Okay.
Well, that's what I...
What does your malpractice insurance carrier say?
I'm not sure, actually.
Okay, because in our state statutes, that is one of our statutes that, you know, that could be a possible violation of professional ethics is not performing a surgical consent prior to the visit, by prior to a surgery. But the fact that you documented that you did it, that it was written and signed, but then there was no signed, that's why this was a red flag.
Sure. No, I'd like to add, so typically at one point we began to phase out the written consent. I'm not sure if it had been at this point or not. I know it was right around that time, but I don't know exactly when. There are times when people sign consent forms and sometimes something doesn't get scanned in properly or doesn't get into the right file because we're also in the process of changing over medical records, and our office was moving around that time as well. So I'm not sure. But it said maybe it's possible had we phased them out, maybe the verbiage hadn't been changed, but the written consent, the same information that I may or may not have had her sign is always reviewed verbally with the patient every single time by me, not by the medical assistant. It's always by me personally.
Well, one of my concerns is too, is if there's ever, if there would be a problem, that would arise, a complaint that could arise out of a surgical procedure.
Sure.
And there's no written consent. So again, it's like, yes, APMA and American College of Foot and Ankle Surgeons, they are components in our profession,
right.
But they are not the licensing
sure.
board.
Well, so, instead, if that's something that should be changed, I'm happy to reinstate that. That's not a problem.
Because that's, this is kind of, where we are, here with this.
Sure.
I
understand.
Are we not rising? We're not rising to the level of something that has, was anyone in any kind of danger or, health and safety of
sure.
patients. But, this is where, this is why, my concern was raised on these questions. And also, do you, on the billing stuff, do you see those HCFA forms? Do you have a billing company that reads your notes and codes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So we have an outside billing company.
Okay. Because my question, too, again, is on these, the lack of the modifiers, like I said, on the material that was presented here in your file shows the codes, but not with modifiers. So I'm curious if, to make sure that those modifiers are present on those forms that go into billing, that that the company is sending in, because those are, obviously important to you getting paid. Having proper modifiers and
sure.
documentation.
I'm sorry to interrupt. My new billing company didn't take over until March. So it also could have been during the transition from the old billing company to the new billing company, which may be why I changed. So we did have issues with our old billing company. But as far as I knew, everything was being done the way it should be. But I think the second procedure was 5 weeks after, something like that, after the first procedure. Yeah, the first one was January 26th, and the second procedure was March 9th.
Okay.
So I'm not sure. I think I'm understanding that the modifier had to be used if it was within the global period, but I thought the global period for an ingrown procedure is 14 days, but it's certainly no more than that. So I'm not even sure that a modifier would be required at that time. But we do have a billing company that took over in March, so they would not have overseen this one.
Okay.
I'd be happy to change the consent situation. That's not a problem.
Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ilano, do you have any questions for Dr. Glessinger?
I don't have any questions. I would recommend doing the consent form just in
sure.
case.
Absolutely.
Dr. Ilano?
No questions at this time.
Okay.
No questions at this time.
Oh, yes. Mr. Rhodes. I'm sorry, sir. I didn't. So the decisions that we make here, we have to decide, what level of, has this risen to anything that would require, movement to a informal hearing or continuing an investigation to get more information. Right now, after we've had this discussion, I'm not so sure that that's the mode we have to go to. So I would offer a letter of concern to Dr. Glessinger in the regarding our discussion here about proper consent for surgical procedures, particularly remembering the for the 11750 for matrixectomy. Any additions to that? Okay. Do I have a second? Any discussion on that?
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Dr. Yolano. We're ready to take our vote. So all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. Thank you, Dr. Glessinger. So you'll receive that letter of concern from Heather.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much
for
being on the line. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All righty. Okay, so our next case is complaint number 20-07-C, which is Dr. Kathleen, or Catherine, I'm sorry, Kennedy. And our investigator on this is Dr. Steck. And we do have the complainants here with us in the conference room. So we will hear from the complainants once we have Dr. Steck give his report and ask questions of him. So I would ask Dr. Steck to give us his report. Thank you.
MP patient is currently 54-year-old female that saw Dr. Kennedy for the first time on 4-26-16 for bunions of both feet, right greater than left. Patient states that she did have surgery for her right bunion, hammer toes, and Taylor's bunion, and that she developed complications after surgery. These complications include wound healing problems, painful lump formed laterally of her foot, painful scar, dislocated fifth MTP joint. The patient became frustrated with her postoperative care and saw a new doctor and has had two additional procedures on her foot to try and correct these complications. The patient feels that she did not have pain in the lateral foot to begin with and that this portion of the surgery was unnecessary. She also feels that Dr. Kennedy did not inform her of the dislocated fifth MTP joint and did the surgery incorrectly. Despite her additional procedures, she feels her foot is not ever going to be normal or the way it was. The allegations are unnecessary surgery, improper surgical technique, and not informing patient of a condition postoperatively. A summary of the licensee's written response. The doctor recounts her chart notes, which I will do a little bit later. She then addresses concerns that the patient has alleged, stating that the patient did not follow all postoperative instructions, including staying on weight-bearing and not keeping a follow-up appointment. Dr. Seitz's note of 7-21-17 that the patient came into the office for orthotics and was not complaining of any pain, but states that the orthotics helped decrease pain. At scheduled and kept appointments, doctor continues to address patient's concerns. The patient was released to work on 12-22-16 as she was having no pain. On 1-9-18, 2 years after the surgery, the patient returns complaining of lateral foot pain and deformity of her fifth toe. Toe spacers and topical creams were dispensed. Additional surgery was also discussed. This was the last appointment until 7-3-19 when the patient made an appointment and was very upset. The patient was on a knee scooter at that time and had recent surgery on her foot by another doctor. No evaluation was able to be done at that time due to the patient's aggressiveness and verbal abuse. The doctor tried to discuss issues the patient had, but was unable to do so. The doctor provides a review of consent and postoperative visits, stating that x-rays were discussed in detail with the patient. The medical records review started in April of 2016. On the 26th was the initial visit. The patient was complaining of right bunion she had had for 5 years. Quote, it does not hurt, but it bothers her when she puts on clothes, shoes, unquote. There is no mention of hammer toe or bunionette in the HPI of the initial note. On the physical exam portion, there is a section called bunion pain. This does not clarify laterality. In the doctor's letter to the board, she states that Maria, quote, Maria presented to my office with right foot pain for the past 5 years and is inquiring what can be done about it, end quote. And this is not corroborated in the clinical note, however. In fact, no pain is documented.
Dr. Steck, are you still there?
I am. I just had a glitch. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, okay. Just wanted to make sure. Okay.
I'm sorry. I had a glitch on my computer here. I apologize.
Take your time. Just let us know when you're back on.
Okay, I am back on. I'm back in the section on the initial office visit. The patient, the doctor's letter to the board stated that, quote, Maria presented to my office with right foot pain for the past 5 years and has been inquiring what can be done about it. The pain that is mentioned here is not corroborated in the clinical note. However, in fact, no pain is documented. The documents state that she has pain in closed shoes, but that it bothers her in closed shoes. But I'm not exactly sure what that means. If it's pain or pressure. The physical exam portion of the note, it was extremely difficult to follow. At the beginning, there is a section referring to bunion pain without designation of laterality, other than to state that the right is worse than the left. There are then sections titled right foot and left foot, where further exam takes place individually. The right foot, which is the eventual surgical foot exam, is looked at. The notes again were very difficult to follow. For example, in the section where for the right foot pain, it states erythema noted to medial first MTP J, both dorsal and lateral. This doesn't really make sense to me. This section does refer to erythema to the lateral fifth metatarsal, limited range of motion of first, second, third, and fifth MTP joint, but states no pain or crepitus noted to any joint. Interestingly, this section also documents instability of Lisfranc's joint, which is not worked up any further as far as I can tell, and is perpetuated in the notes on every office visit afterwards, that there is instability of the Lisfranc joint without further workup. On the left foot section of the note is identical in description to the right bunion, Taylor's bunion, and the MTP joints. The only difference is that there's no documentation of Lisfranc instability. These inconsistencies and I imagine perpetuated charting errors are really permeate these notes, and I've only been able to outline a few of them. The diagnosis on the first visit is bilateral bunions, unspecified metatarsalgia, bilateral foot pain, and bilateral bunions. The treatment is stated as discussed further, surgical and non-surgical treatment options, and the patient chooses to proceed with the surgery. No x-rays had been taken up to this point, but were scheduled to be done at the next appointment. On September 6th of 2016, the patient returns to pursue surgery of her right foot, stating that she has put it off long enough. Her exam remains the same. There's, again, confusing notes in the treatment section. States that she, quote, discussed surgical treatment options for Austin, possible Aiken if needed, Taylor's bunion, and hematose correction of 2, 3, 4, and 5 right. Patient states that she would like to pursue surgical correction of the bunion, end quote. from reading this note, the surgery was discussed of all the above, but the patient wanted to proceed with the bunion surgery. Then surgery is scheduled for bunion, hammer toes, and Taylor's bunion. The x-rays taken at this preoperative visit were reviewed. As a side note, all the x-rays that I reviewed, not just this date, but all of them, had Dr. Sarraf, S-A-R-R-A-F, name as the provider. I missed visit the first x-ray. The doctor describes the bunion and the hammer toes accurately. I question somewhat the evaluation of a large Taylor's bunion. It appears to be small at best, particularly on the AP. The oblique does show some lateral curvature of the fifth metatarsal, which is not unusual on this view. Many times, however, clinical evaluation does not directly correlate with the x-rays, and these can still be symptomatic. Patient returns again November 1st of 2016 for a pre-op visit for bunion, hammer toes, and Taylor's bunion. States that she is still having pain, but as noted, pain has not been a complaint in the past. Physical exam is unchanged, again with continued note of list rank instability. The patient is cleared medically for surgery by Dr. Alturi. The workup is done, and in her 10-25-16 note, for clearance, states that the patient went on a hiking trip without any problems. I did review the consent, which appears to be very clear, with the proposed procedure would include a bunion, second through fifth hammer toes, as well as a Taylor's bunion. This is written in layman's terms. There's a diagram of the foot clearly outlining the above procedures, as well as all perioperative instructions that I thought were complete. On 11-16-16, the patient had surgery, including an Austin bunionectomy, a fifth MTP tenotomy and capsulotomy, resection lateral fifth metatarsal head, removal of lateral foot mass. This is my comment, that this was plantar to the fifth metatarsal head, but there's no description of what this looked like, consistency, et cetera. And I question whether this was potentially part of the plantar plate. The pathology was returned as normal tissue. Second and third hammer toe corrections were done. The consent and the preoperative appointment talked about second, third, fourth, and fifth, but the fourth and fifth were not corrected. And there doesn't appear to be a reason that I can see that for these not being done. There was an exostectomy of the medial hallux IP joint, and I'm not sure why this was done, as there's no explanation of a bony prominence in the clinical notes or any unusual finding in the operative report that would necessitate this procedure. And a lengthening of the HL was performed. I did review the intraoperative x-ray showing reduced deformities. There's a section of the lateral fifth metatarsal head that had been resected. The follow-up appointment November 21st was routine. There were several calls from the patient that I believe the doctor responded to promptly and properly to these concerns. 12-8-16, the patient returns in a CAM boot and using a knee scooter. The bunion pain section of the physical exam still states right greater than left bunion. The right foot section, however, is updated to reflect the surgical correction. December 15th, 16, patient is following up again and in quote, lots, unquote, of pain at the fifth toe. States nothing has changed. However, in previous note, it states that she had mild throbbing pain. Notes continue to be inconsistent in this regard. Patient was concerned of her lateral foot is now infected. There's mild erythema and wound dehiscence. She's treated with an inner boot. She's then seen in follow-up a week later. She is having no pain and ready to return to work. She's not using the CAM boot as instructed, and the wound is not healed. She is to stay in a surgical shoe and okay to return to work. It appears that sometime after this appointment, there was a missed appointment. The doctor calls the patient without an answer. for a follow-up. As another side note, that x-rays are taken at each of the post-operative appointments. The 5th MTP joint is subluxed on the 11-21-16 note and dislocated by 12-22-16. This is not documented in the notes or in the x-ray report. There's one set of images that has the dressings in place and visualization is somewhat minimal, but otherwise these findings are fairly clear. February 17th, 2017, another follow-up appointment. The toe is swollen. The second toe is swollen, but otherwise seems to be doing okay. There's strapping to the toes to help with swelling. About 3 months later, in May of 17, the patient is complaining of second toe swelling and great toe numbness. No complaints documented regarding the fifth toe. In fact, the physical exam documents no pain or crepitus to any joint of the right foot. The patient is given a second light-duty note for work at this appointment. The x-ray report is the same as all the other post-operative reports for the radiographs. On June 23rd of 17, the patient was seen for orthoses. She is also complaining of a callus on the lateral foot. There's a new diagnosis of corns and callosities and build trimming 2 to 4 lesions, but nothing documented in physical exam of calluses. She picked up orthotics a few weeks later. And about 6 months later, in January of 2018, the patient's complaining of a big lump in the lateral foot and medial deviation of the fifth toe due to the callus. X-ray is taken, and again, the same, in fact, the exact same read as all of the other X-ray reports. I wanted to read the treatment plan from this date. Give me 1 second here. So the treatment plan for this date, read from the notes, the diagnosis is other hammer toe of the right foot. And it says, notes, colon, explain to patient that the fifth digit is displacing itself medially and is now pressing on the digit. Discuss with patient that if this continues to be a problem in the future, we may need an arthroplasty of the fourth digit and skin plasty procedure for the fifth digit. Dispense toe spacer and splint for the patient today. Going back to my review, it's clear that the doctor does not appreciate the deformity radiographically, and therefore this is not treated. In July of 19, the patient comes in upset and had surgery elsewhere. He asked the doctor why she didn't tell her the toe was dislocated. The doctor tells her it was not dislocated on any of her postoperative x-rays. Doctor states that the toe has shifted due to dehiscence and due to noncompliance. The patient left angry. Findings on allegation number one, unnecessary surgery, failure to recognize and treat a postoperative complication, I believe is substantiated. I'm concerned that the initial note does not document any conservative treatment that warrants progression to surgery. If conservative treatment had been done previously by the patient, it is not documented. Furthermore, the HPI of the initial note states that there is no pain, but, quote, bothers her when she puts on closed shoes, end quote. This could be a wide range of symptoms, but does not appear to be painful. In addition, no conservative treatment is documented and surgery is pursued regardless. The fact that the fifth MTP joint dislocates postoperatively can be a complication of surgery. However, this is unfortunately not recognized and not addressed. Each of the x-rays up to this point, the report is exactly the same as the report of the one postoperatively, and the MTP joint is dislocated and unrecognized. I there's also inconsistency and errors in doctor's notes. I named a few here, but there are many. I believe these errors are perpetuated in the electronic record over and over. And my recommendations are at least some sort of chart review that these templates can be very helpful, but can also cause perpetuation of errors. And if these are used, make sure this reflects the current visit and possibly CME or radiographic hours. That's my report.
Thank you very much for that very detailed and concise report, Dr. Steck. Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ulano, do you have any questions for Dr. Steck?
No, thank you for that report. It was extremely detailed. I don't have any questions after that report.
Dr. Ulano?
No questions at this time for me.
I do have a few questions. Oh, I should ask Mr. Rhodes first. Okay, thank you. Dr. Steck, do you think postoperative x-rays were overutilized?
Yes, I believe there were x-rays done at every postoperative visit, as I recall. I believe that probably was overutilized somewhat.
I have several questions. When there's discussion about a small wound dehiscence at the fifth and the doctor opines that the dehiscence could cause a dislocation, we don't even have a description of the actual size of the dehiscence, but I find that would be a highly unlikely cause of a small dehiscence to cause a dislocation of the fifth MPJ, and I just would like to know your thought.
I agree.
Hang on a second here. Okay, so I'm still here on the fifth MPJ. So in reading the operative report, the McGlamley elevator was used to relieve the soft tissue contractures and do the capsulotomy. And I'm kind of the thought that there's that possibility that maybe that was a little, an aggressive capsulotomy could be, an underlying factor in the ultimate subluxation and dislocation. And the point that you brought up, I think that that's also a very good possibility of that is with removal of the soft tissue mass that was plantar to that fifth med head, that could have also been, part of the plantar plate, which of course then too would be a factor in the development of a subluxation then to a dislocation. And my other, also too, on that x-ray, it is my opinion that I believe it looks like the fifth metatarsal lateral aspect, the head may have been, it looks like it may have been staked. I don't know, I mean, what is your opinion?
Yeah, on the different views that it does appear possibly over resected, particularly on the oblique views. And so, I guess all three of those things, the aggressive release of the capsule, possibly taking too much of the lateral eminence and possibly removing some of the plantar plate structures, all could lead to this.
Because I definitely agree with your, that first post-op, that, I mean, it was apparent what was happening. So, I am in agreement with you on the inconsistencies in documentation and things. I've noticed also that, I don't think the certain levels of of like the 99203 and 214 were supported by documentation. And also, I'm again not seeing modifiers on some of the billing, like with billing for the orthotics, the L3000 code right and left, but there also, there was, I noticed, an addition for the L code of 2275, which is actually, that indicates the addition of a varus or valgus correction, but in the L3000 code, that's included in there. So I don't believe that you, you know, that addition of that 2275 to the L3000 code, I'm not quite sure that that is really an appropriate billing on that. Let me move to my other page here. And again, I too would like, and I would like to, you know, that not having the HICPA forms, we can't see where things were linked up to one another. And my other question is, did you feel that you had enough information from what we were, what you were seeing in the doctor's chart that was presented to not want to see the files or the medical record from the secondary doctor who treated the patient with that other surgery?
You know, I guess I didn't know that was an option for me. I'm sorry. I would have been happy to look into that further, but I reviewed what I had.
Oh, I understand that. I'm just saying, you know, I just wanted, were, if you had thought about, you know, thought about it, or if you didn't feel that it was necessary to get those additional records, that you felt confident enough in what you reviewed from the material that you had, that you could present your conclusions satisfactorily. That's all I'm asking.
I see. Yes, I did.
Okay. Thank you so much. Did anybody else derive any questions for Dr. Steck? All right. So we have the complainant MP is present. So I will ask MP. She is here present with her husband. She is the complainant. So she will be who we hear from and ask questions of. So I would ask, you may please come up and have a seat, and we'll ask you to give us your summary, and then my board members will be free to ask you questions.
Sure.
Okay. And thank you for coming down today. Please.
Okay. After my surgery, a couple days later, I was in extreme pain. I had to call my husband to come home to take me back to her office because I was in extreme, I mean, the worst pain I've ever had. So he came home, took me back to her office, and I had told her that something was wrong with my foot because it was burning. And so she took off the bandage, and she looked at it, and she's not mentioning that she told me that it was ruptured. She looked at it. She just said, oh, you're going to be fine. She just wiped it. She goes, I'm going to take you off the boot and put you on a surgical shoe. She goes, I'd rather you wear this. So she rewrapped it, and she told me, you know, you're going to be fine. It'll heal on its own. You're going to be okay. She didn't bother to re-x-ray it. Nothing.
Pardon me, MP. Would you say which date was that, please?
It was a couple days after my surgery.
The first surgery.
Yeah, the first surgery.
First surgery. Thank you.
So I stayed home. Kid you not, my foot throbbed so extremely bad. It took like over a month to completely really heal. I have never had a bump on the side of my foot. I started developing a callus and a bump. I went back to her and I explained to her. I said, my foot is not right. I said, I'm getting a bump. My toe, my little toe was going underneath my other toe. She was aware of it. She goes, yes, I see that, but there's nothing I can do about it. She goes, I'm going to put you on some steroid cream. So she put me on a steroid cream for a couple months, and then I went back, and I said, that's not helping. She changed the steroid cream to another steroid cream. She ordered it from the Potter's house. And this whole time, I couldn't even wear closed shoes. I couldn't even touch anything on the side of my foot because it would really hurt. And this whole time, she made it seem like I had to just give it time. It would heal. But how is it supposed to heal when there was a bump growing out of my side of my foot? It was pushed out. So I went like that for who knows how long. I gave up. I told my husband, she can't do anything. I guess I got to just let it wait it out. I'm not a doctor. And she even put me on light duty at work not to be walking on my foot. Because she, when I went back to her, she told me I had a bursa. And I said, what's a bursa? She goes, did you do anything? I said, no. A bursa is like a injury after a surgery. And that's when I went back to when it ruptured. I'm thinking that's when it dislocated. And she left me like that. Didn't re-x-ray it, nothing. So when I finally stopped going to her because she wasn't doing it, she never talked about correcting it, nothing. And obviously she took x-rays of it. So finally I told my husband, I said, you know, I'm gonna go see another doctor, get another opinion because my foot is not right. I still have pain. At the time I didn't know it was my bone. I had a bump on the side of my foot. I couldn't wear closed shoes. This whole time, she had given me letters for my work to be on light duty, not to be on my foot a lot. So and then when I went to the new doctor, the moment I got there, he took x-rays, and I went in a room, and he must have looked over the x-rays, and then he asked me what happened. So I went over, I told him everything that happened. And he says, well, do you really want to know what's wrong with your foot? And I said, yeah. He goes, it's dislocated. I was, this has all been so hard to cope with, emotional and stressful. And I did, when the second doctor was going to do the surgery, I told my husband, take me back over there. I just want to ask her to explain to me what did she do to me? And she told me, your foot wasn't dislocated. But when the second doctor told me it was dislocated, I was very nice. I called her office to get my records and the x-rays. I picked up, they told me, well, you're going to have to give it a couple days so she can review them. And then she'll release them to you. So I waited a couple days. I went and picked up my stuff. And she gave me a CD here. Huh? And it shows my toe dislocated. I was like, oh my God, this whole time. She acted like there was nothing wrong with my foot. And how could you not see it? I had a bump on the side of my foot. You know what I mean? And even the new doctor, when he was going to do my surgery, it says on there, it's dislocated. And I just feel like she was negligent. She wasn't compassionate. She did not take accountability for what she's done to me. I'm a healthy person. I'm 54 years old. I have never had surgery. I've never had medical problems. And this has been the worst thing ever, you know? And I just don't think what she did was right to me.
Well, but we certainly appreciate you coming here to talk to us. I have some questions I'd like to ask you. So when you first went, did the big toe cause you pain?
Honestly, it was starting to throb a little bit, but it never completely hurt, nothing like that. I mean, I was able to wear shoes, closed shoes, everything. As my age that I am now, when I went to her, I figured, you know what, I'm not getting any younger, and I just started where it started throbbing. So I thought, you know what, I better get it corrected because I'm getting older, you know, can't get worse. It's better to do it now, you know, is why I went too.
But, and there wasn't any pain on the outside?
No, no, not at all. I've never had nothing wrong with the side of my foot, no.
So prior to that, did you have any other treatment, like wore pads on it or had bigger shoes or had therapy or injections?
Oh, no, 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 uh-uh, no.
So when you would go in for your post-operative visits, were the x-rays shown to you or explained? So you said it was just a matter of days after the surgery that you started to have pain.
A couple of days after my surgery, it ruptured.
Okay.
I went back to her office. She told me it ruptured. I'm surprised that it's not in her records. And I even asked her, when I talked to her, I said, do you have that in my records that you're stating that it ruptured? Do you remember you told me it was ruptured? She said to me, yes, and I go, do you remember I kept telling you my toe was going underneath my other toe? And you said you couldn't do anything about it? She goes, no, we did try talking about correction. I go, no, you didn't. No, you didn't.
So any time after your surgery, did you ever have an injury to the foot, like something
no.
falling on it? You didn't trip or fall?
Okay. Nope.
I think I have two more. Just a minute here. If you ask that one. Okay. That's all I have. Gentlemen, do you have questions for the complainant MP? Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ilano?
Was there any discussion on conservative care before the surgery?
No, she just told me what I needed to do after the surgery, that she was going to put me on a boot and to keep the weight off my foot. And that was that.
Any more, Dr. Foreman?
No, that's it.
Dr. Ilano.
Yeah. Hi. Good morning, MP. Thank you for bringing your concerns up to the board. I got a question for you.
Yes.
Prior to the surgery, the pre-op evaluation, did you understand and did she take her time to go over what the procedures that are going to be performed for you?
She did go over it. She told me that she wanted to also shave the side of my foot. I was only going in for the bunion. She mentioned that the side of my foot, I had a bump, and I guess she ended up telling my husband it was a little cyst or something after the surgery. So I told her, I said, well, if it needs to be done, I guess we should do it. I mean, I'm not a doctor. So I went along with what she told me to do, what we needed to do.
Being that said, how bothersome was that, the side of your fifth toe?
How what? I'm sorry.
Could you repeat that, doctor?
How bothersome is that? Sure. How bothersome was that on your fifth toe, that bump?
How big was it?
How bothersome? How much did it bother you?
Oh, I couldn't wear closed shoes. I couldn't even wear boots, nothing. I couldn't wear nothing tight. I had to wear loose shoes.
Dr. Ilano asked you about the outside of your foot, ma'am.
Oh, now?
Before your surgery, ma'am.
Oh, it was like this. I had nothing. I had no bump, nothing. Nothing. I didn't even have a callus.
Okay. And prior to seeing Dr. Kennedy, did you try any conservative care, such as white shoes or pads on that area?
After she noticed that I was having problems, she decided to put me on those, order the orthopedics, they call it. But as far as her telling me to put anything on it, like for it inside the shoe for it not to hurt, no, she didn't. I couldn't even wear closed shoes. because it was out of my bone. Yeah, because when the doctor saw it, the second doctor, he goes, that right there is your bone. It's popping out. It's being pushed out.
I have no further questions.
Thanks. Yeah, Dr. Ilano, I think maybe she had misunderstood, but I had asked the same question, and she had indicated that there was no prior conservative treatment that was rendered or discussed. So, Mr. Rhodes, did you have a question, sir? You're correct. Those were like some of the questions I had was discussing with Dr. Steck about the surgical procedures and things that could lead to that issue. Yeah. Yes, yes. And I thought of another question, MP. There's indications in the chart that what's called an Una boot was put on your foot at visits, a wrap that's gauze that's got like a zinc oxide paste in it. That they're in the billing here, it says that your foot was wrapped, and then at one several times, and then at one point that you had like a toe splint. Was that the second toe used on your second toe or your fifth toe?
No, she did the surgery. She just wrapped it, and then put me on a boot.
Correct. But when after the surgery, during the postoperative course, I'm seeing on the billing here that what's called an Una boot, which is like a soft, some people will call it a soft cast, was applied on several visits here beginning on the 21st of November of 16. Again, I see it on December 8th of 16, 12/15 of 16. And then I see a strapping that happens in February of 17. So, but you don't recall
that.
Okay.
She put me on a surgical shoe and that was it.
Okay. All right. Anybody else? Any other questions before? Thank you. We appreciate that. If you can go back and have a seat, and we'll continue in our procedure here. All right. So we have Dr. Kennedy is on the phone. So Dr. Kennedy, it is your time to make a statement. Give us a summary.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to thank everyone for their time today. I did have just a few things to add to this summary. It was very complete, what Dr. Stuck provided. I did want to add that on her initial appointment, which was 4/26 of 2016, she was referred by her primary care doctor for evaluation and treatment of bunions. And in this referral, it was for the specific treatment of her bunion. And then on her pre-op appointment that was 11/1 of 2016. There was pain in her bunions, and on my note it does say just bunion pain, but that was bilateral with the right side being worse than left. My physical exam doesn't represent pain on palpation because her pain was due mostly to shoe gear and an inability to walk without pain, and specifically trouble with closed-toed shoes. That's what led us to the surgical treatment of her bunions. I also wanted to add where she referred to the bursa diagnosis that I had given her, and as well as, forgive me, I forget which doctor commented on the aggressive soft tissue mass resection as possibly removal of the plantar plate as well. I did send that specimen to Sonora Quest Laboratories, and it did come back as a bursa on the fifth metatarsal that reads with portions of fibro fatty tissue without significant histopathological change, negative for inflammation and negative for neoplasm. There is no note in this specimen that I removed any part of the plantar plate. Additionally, I want to add that on her postoperative appointment on 12/15 of 2016, there was a dehiscence, which I believe is what MP is referring to as the rupture. So a rupture of the surgical site, a dehiscence of the surgical site that was treated with the Unibu, which is the wrap, the post-op wrap that I put on her. When she came back to her 12/22/2016 appointment, there was no pain and she related that she was ready to go back to work. At this time, I thought that the complication had been resolved because she was relating to no pain and asking to go back to work. She did not present to the office with lateral foot pain until the January 2018 visit, which I treated her pain with padding inside her shoe, toe spacers, and a splint. And there was, at this visit, discussion of additional surgery to treat her the toe that was deviating, that she was saying the fifth toe was overlapping the fourth toe. And then she did not come back for a follow-up visit until 7 of 2019. That was all I had to add.
Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for Dr. Kennedy?
Yes. Did you discuss any conservative treatments before the surgery with the patient?
Just generic conservative treatments, but nothing specific, and no specific conservative treatment was done.
Okay, and based upon the x-ray, did you notice the fifth MTPJ?
I did notice that it was moving medially, but I didn't think it was dislocated as there was still articular cartilage aligned with articular cartilage, but there is definitely something going on with that fifth toe.
Okay, and did you discuss that with the patient at all, or?
I did on the January 9th of 2018 visit, which was the very first time that she alerted me to any kind of pain on that lateral portion of her foot. All the previous visits had been pain on the second and third toes, or pain or concerns of swelling on the second and third toes, but no mention of pain on the lateral side of her foot until that appointment.
Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Ilano?
Hi, Dr. Kenny. It's Dr. Ilano. I have a question for you. You took x-rays at every post-op visit. Is that your protocol to take x-rays after every post-op visit?
Yes.
Okay. And do you write down your findings on those every x-ray post-op visit?
Yes, I do, but I do acknowledge that there was an error in getting the current findings for each visit into the chart. I believe this was due to using electronic medical records. The dates don't correspond, the dates of the x-rays don't correspond to the visit dates, as well as the findings.
Okay. Do you do x-rays in-house or do you send it out?
They're done in-house and they're absolutely always reviewed with the patient at every visit.
Okay. I also got a question in regards to your note taken. You said that the patient had pain and you wanted to add notes. Are you adding those notes now or do you plan to add those notes in the future in reference to their pain?
Are you speaking of the initial visit or the 11/1 of 2016?
Both.
Well, on the initial 4/26/2016, she didn't complain of pain. She just complained that her foot bothered her with shoe gear. The pain wasn't until the 11/1 of 2016 visit. And again, it was pain with shoe gear and pain with walking, not necessarily pain on palpation or pain with range of motion.
Okay. And another point that I wanted to clear up was Dr. Steck mentioned that the x-ray was ordered by Dr. Seraf.
In our office, there's two doctors, and the x-ray machine defaults to him as far as just the doctor that's put in for the findings. But I did order the x-rays, and they were done in the office for myself. That needs to be corrected in our office.
Okay. And did you do you have separate billings, or did you bill for the office, I mean, for the x-ray?
We billed for the x-ray done in office.
Okay. Okay. I have no further questions.
Sir.
I'm sorry, I can't understand you. The phone is cutting out.
What is your opinion why that fifth MPG joint on the fifth digit or the moved like that, dislocated?
Initially, I thought it was from the dehiscence. Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. I'm getting feedback of what I'm saying on my phone. I initially thought that the slight movement of the toe, what will become the dislocation, was due to the wound dehiscing and possibly the buckle of the cam boot rubbing on her foot. That's why I took her out of the cam boot and put her in the surgical shoe.
Do you have any other questions, Ms.?
Pressure. I mean, yeah, and you have to think of everything. So, Dr. Kennedy, this is Dr. Kimball. Did you ask the patient, had there been any extraneous trauma to that foot postoperatively?
I did not ask her that, no.
Okay. And I'm also noticing, So when you're doing your notes, do you do the coding, or does the biller do the coding after reading your note?
The biller does the coding.
Okay, so because I'm curious if they're billing appropriately during the postoperative period, there was no notation. You bill a 99024, which is the E&M code that's not, that's the post-operative management and evaluation code. And I did not see that in any of the section of, in the post-operative period on the patient. So I'm just kind of, so do you evaluate your billings do you do an audit of what's going out so that you see what's happening, how the insurance companies are being charged with proper modifiers?
Not at this time. With the time of this issue, I do currently.
Yeah, that's it. You are the captain of the ship. That's your responsibility to make sure that is. Because I know I saw one of your notes in our file here. It's on page 448. There's a remark that you're not sure of the codes. So that, that's why it kind of threw a red flag at me to make sure that, that the codes that you're using, it's understood what they're for, what they're showing and how they're linked up to your diagnoses correctly. Again, and the Una boot too, there was no modifier on your Una boot because you have to show that's something that's associated with the surgery during that post-operative time. So again, like I said, I'm glad to hear that you're saying that you are looking at what's going out because it is important because if there are questions on billing at times, I really don't know that there are too many billing companies who are going to stand up for the doctor and not throw them under the bus. So that's why, I think these are important questions. So does anyone else?
I understand.
Thanks. Does anyone
else? And I'll look into it.
Yes, thank you. I'm sorry, I didn't. I got, sometimes I are connection here. I don't mean to interrupt it, but I'm not hearing you, and then I start to talk. I apologize.
I was just saying thank you for bringing that to my attention, and I will absolutely look into it.
All righty. So does anyone else have any other questions or comments? All right. So at this point in our discussion or in deliberation, you know, we've got the determination that we need to make here are, you know, the heirs, you know, are we at the point where, you know, things that happen aren't sufficient enough to make any action other than, you know, in an initial review, remember, we have you can dismiss the case, we could file a letter of concern, or you can issue an order for continuing education. Or if you feel that there are violations of standard of care, that this would then have to be moved to an informal hearing. So the task here is in this discussion to determine where this lies. And we have obviously a situation here where the complication was not, initially, it was not, I think, addressed in an appropriate fashion, even though it was seen, but it and then it progressed down to a dislocation and then subsequent surgery by another physician. And of course, we've had some discussions about, you know, coding and some other things that I think, you know, just a discussion on that. You can make the licensee aware of those are issues that they need to be monitoring. I don't think those are anything that has, you know, leads to any kind of, action for the licensee. But again, the main concern I have here is in regards to that postoperative complication. So I would like to hear what your opinions are, please. Dr. Foreman, Dr. Ilano?
I agree with that, and I was considering a letter of concern regarding the postoperative interaction with the patient.
I feel that the complication should have been brought out to the patient. And for the patient to be aware of what's going on at an earlier stage. To me, letter of concern in regards to recognizing post-operative complications would be sufficient.
So, and if you, of course, that you recall into Dr. Steck's investigation report that, you know, he, you know, was discussing or had made a recommendation by, about, X-ray review course. I'm also, I think in my opinion, I would also like to see a non-disciplinary, issue order for continuing education in addition to that letter of concern, that maybe some, regarding post-operative complications of surgical procedures at the 5th MPJ?
Yes, and radiological review, as Dr. Steck alluded to or recommended.
Okay.
What was it?
I agree.
Radiological review?
Yes, and surgical complications of 5th MPJ surgeries. And Dr. Foreman's the mention of the letter of concern regarding, I believe it was recognition of the post-op complication. And then you also mentioned, Dr. Foreman, something about the communication aspect with the patient. Could you?
Yes.
So I think
Dr. Foreman, could you repeat that?
Postoperative complications and interactions with the patient.
In discussion of those postoperative complications in a...
As well as documenting in the chart notes.
I just want to make sure we have all that correct. So we have...
And on the CME, that's 6 months to finish.
Right. Okay, so now... And we need to ascertain a number of hours of CME we'd like to see. And, of course, that obviously can be done online, and it's pre-approved by the board and has to be completed within 6 months of signing of the order.
And how many hours?
That's what we got to talk about now.
Okay.
So we talked about post-op complications for fifth MPJ surgery, pardon me, and the radiologic review. So I would think we could, 2 to 3 hours in each of those categories. Does anybody have comments on that? Or
three hours is good for me.
It's disciplinary.
Pardon me, Dr. Yolano?
3 hours is good for each of those.
For each category. Dr. Foreman, are you in agreement?
Yes, 3 hours is adequate.
For each category?
Yes. That's six, right?
Then that would have to go on to, we'd have to move to an informal interview
for
that. And
okay, I don't think then... Three total?
No, three on in each category, the radiological review and the surgical post-op complications. All righty. So any, we've made the motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Yolano. Is there any other discussion? So I will take a voice roll call vote on that. So Dr. Yolano?
Aye.
Dr. Foreman?
Aye.
Mr. Rhodes? Dr. Campbell? Aye. All righty. So...
All right, Dr. Kennedy will be receiving those from Heather here in the next
So,
week.
Dr. Kennedy, you will, Heather will be in contact with you regarding documents and paperwork associated. All righty, and thank you for your participation today, and thank you to our complainants for here. If you have questions, please direct those to Heather. All righty. And, so that. We are now, we have one more investigation file, and that would be, I'm sorry, Seamus, you are correct. So we have our next, Dr. Cohn, are you back on the phone?
I'm here.
Thanks, sir.
Hello, let me get Dr. Dershowitz. Hold on one.
Oh, okay, thanks, Brenna.
Secretaries.
Here's Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the board. I am on the phone, Kim Kent, for Dr. Dershowitz.
Okay, thank you, Kimberly. It's Dr. Campbell. Just a second. We're going to... we are then... Let me go back here in the... Just a second, please.
Hello?
Hi, Dr. Dershowitz. Dr. Campbell, just a second, okay? We've got...
Sure.
Kimberly Kent is on with you, and we have Dr. Cohn, who is our investigator. Just a second. Here we go.
Good morning, Jerry.
This is, that was Dr. Pavlikoff, I think. This is for case number 20-01-C, Michael Dershowitz, DPM. He is present telephonically, as well as counsel Kimberly Kent. We do not have a complainant appearing telephonically, and Dr. Cohn is our investigator who is telephonic. So we will go ahead and ask Dr. Cohn for his investigator's report.
Okay, thank you. This is Dr. Cohn. It's complaint number 2001C, Dr. Michael Dershowitz. I'd first like to open up with explaining that this case was apparently initially reviewed by Dr. Polakoff, and upon Dr. Dershowitz and Ms. Kent receiving the complaint, I believe they requested it be redone by a different investigator due to a conflict of some sort with Dr. Polakoff, and I was asked to do that review. I want to note to you and everybody, I have not looked at nor ever read Dr. Polakoff's report, even to date. So I didn't want that to influence any of my discussions or decisions. As far as this complaint, the complainant, N.W., had initiated a complaint against Dr. Dershowitz. This is over a single surgery, single event, a single visit with Dr. Dershowitz. It involved pain that was associated with running. Patient was noted to be a ultramarathoner, in fact, had been running approximately 7 weeks prior to presenting to Dr. Dershowitz in Finland. The patient, at the time, developed discomfort. She did have a prior history of an ankle injury, but that was in the past. It was not not the cause of her problem at this time on presenting to Dr. Dershowitz. Dr. Dershowitz treated one foot. Her complaint is that Dr. Dershowitz had treated one foot, and the recommendation from Dr. Dershowitz to the patient was for an orthotic. The patient felt the price was excessive and that the cost was going to be $500. Patient felt that Dr. Dershowitz was discussing and recommending only a single orthotic. I'll explain Dr. Dershowitz's reasoning later on. So DW at that time felt it was too expensive. She did not accept the orthotics, proceeding with the orthotics through Dr. Dershowitz. He subsequently found a different orthotic lab, went to that orthotic lab and had the orthotic lab itself fabricate the orthotics. So she was upset about cost in the evaluation, and the part of the reason for the cost is she had subsequently been sent to collections for approximately $66. As far as the summary of Dr. Dershowitz's response to the allegation, this was provided by Ms. Kimberly Kent. And the response involved the visit that occurred on October 2, 2019. The complaint is noted to have been for a painful left ankle. Prior history was of a fracture, but patient was an avid runner, had run approximately 40 miles in sand previously. Patient described the pain as approximately a 5 over 10. Dr. Dershowitz's recommendation at the time, according to Ms. Kent, was for an orthotic. The patient noted to decline and did not reschedule back to the office. Ms. Kent included the history prior to the HPI. And as noted, clinical presentation, assessment plan were all similar to those that the patient herself had described. One of DW's concerns was that her notes or her remembrance of the visit had been different than Dr. Dershowitz's notes, and Ms. Kent was providing information that they are very similar and gave a comparison chart as well of that. As far as the finances, it is admitted that the patient was sent to collection. As far as an additional response, there was a supplemental provided on April 16, 2020, from Ms. Kent concerning expressing the concerns of conflict of interest with Dr. Polakoff. Therefore, the case has been requested that I evaluate. And as I noted, I have done nothing in terms of reviewing Dr. Polakoff's work or her report. The medical record review involved a single visit, which was on October 2nd. The visit itself is pretty scant. It's a page and a half, basically. Within the visit, the chief complaint is noted to be a 50-year-old female presented with left ankle pain secondary to running, in which Dr. Dershowitz has recommended new orthotics. It noted that patient was averse to pain for the orthotics. There was included notes on the onset severity of pain, as well as the type of pain that was present. There are no noted aggravating factors or alleviating factors associated with previous treatments. There were no other complaints. The allergies were noted, and penicillin was noted to be a drug allergy, although within Dr. Dershowitz's note, there is no notation of what occurred with that reaction. In terms of the medications, there was nothing in terms of his notes of explaining doses the patient was on. As far as ibuprofen, no dose was given for that prior. The medical history included anxiety, social history, and patient admitted she was a social drinker. System review is essentially deferred with the exception of only musculoskeletal and integument and neurologic. The physical exam itself noted that vascular status was normal. There were no abnormal findings. Neurologic was in normal limits. Deep tendon reflexes and gross sensation and were all normal. Musculoskeletal, it's noted that there was pain on the medial aspect of the left ankle in the region of the medial gutter. There wasn't a whole lot else in musculoskeletal. X-rays were taken of both the foot and the ancle. They noted exostatic changes, evidence of DJD and the loss of ankle joint base, and an elongated Steeder's process. The impression was DJD with an ankle a gastric equinus, although there's no mention within the notes of measurements, which would help to determine what an equinus was and the extent of that equinus from an objective standpoint. Assessment was for an MRI, CT scans, and vascular studies. Again, there's nothing within the notes to justify any of those recommendations, especially a vascular study with the normal vascular status, and neurologic was within normal limits as well. Treatment was recommendation for orthotic, and as noted, the patient had concern with these and therefore didn't proceed, and that was the only visit. All the intake paperwork was included and was complete. Charges is an issue that I felt was present. The charge provided was a 99204, which is a high-level examination. Within the report, I give my reasoning for feeling that that charge was over. It was excessive, and it was not an indicated charge. There was no documentation, and one of the places, and the reason I'll mention this here is in my note, I did say there's no documentation of time extended to result in extensive counseling. I bring that up because there's another supplemental provided by Ms. Kent, and the bulk of that involved discussion of time. Time isn't a major issue in any type of a visit unless it's greater than 50% of the visit itself. That wasn't the case here, and that's what I was saying in my notes, is that there's that didn't play a part. And from Dr. Dershowitz, Ms. Kent's notes, they were not describing time as being a major portion of why they came up to a 99204. The exam itself was a problem-focused exam. It was extremely limited. It was associated with the affected body area only. There was no documentation of other symptomatic areas, nor related areas or organ systems. Type of decision that was made recommending an orthotic is straightforward. There was nothing discussed in terms of physical therapy, surgical, although not recommended, wasn't discussed. The only thing discussed was recommending an orthotic, which was refused. You can't be more straightforward than that. As far as radiographic studies, it was studies of both the feet and the ankle. It could be questionable whether both needed to be performed if this was not an acute injury and this was more of an association of pain associated with running, in which the patient was referred to the office for orthotics. This becomes a concern to me in that the patient was sent to collections, and part of the reason she sent to collection was because of the elevated coding charges Dr. Dershowitz used. The patient was required to pay additional money, and she felt that she had already been overcharged and didn't pay that money. Therefore, she was sent to collections. I'll explain a couple more seconds of that as we go along. There should be some answers in your packet to a patient interview. I did give her some questions. We had some difficulty getting in touch with each other. Part of that was my fault. My father had passed away during some of the development of this report, so I was unavailable for a period of time. I was out of the state. So it was not, this was nothing where she had done anything that made it difficult. It was just timing associated with my personal issues. So you should have a response. As far as the doctor's response, that's noted within here. I did question the costs, and I did confirm the balance wasn't paid, therefore they turned this patient over to collections. I asked if prior x-rays were available for review. They said there were none. As far as Dr. Dershowitz stated, he didn't prescribe one orthotic. It was to be a pair. In my conclusions, I do say that's a he said, she said. More than like, I don't like to throw a guess in there, but typical for orthotics is a pair. I did question Dr. Dershowitz for some discussion of the CPT code used of the 99204, and it was in this area he again explained the time spent was 30 minutes and the specificity of the questions from the patient. As far as I did ask, because patient is deaf, the sign language had been offered to the patient, and Dr. Dershowitz stated the patient never made them aware of a hearing loss, and none was offered. Patient didn't request it. So in terms of my conclusions for this case, I feel from a medical standpoint, the criteria, his care is appropriate. It met the standard of care. Patient that had come in, had head soreness and pain, was a runner, and orthotics are certainly appropriate. His visit could have been much better in terms of documentation, I mean, describing things such as an equinus or the foot type and what might have led to it and why he wants an orthotic and what would have been put in that orthotic to provide some correction and control. So I do feel that the actual treatment of the patient by Dr. Dershowitz and recommendation for orthotics was appropriate, and therefore I'd unsubstantiate that portion of it. I do feel there was a major issue with his coding. When you're using a 99204 or even a 203, although that's not the case in this, the records need to be consistent with the evaluation, and the records need to be able to justify utilizing such a code. A 204 is a high-level code. It's used in some pretty extensive cases. Maybe a diabetic patient presents to your office with an infection, an abscess, a cellulitis. You're going to be discussing need to go to the hospital, admissions, surgeries, infections, possible amputations, all that kind of stuff. That can lead to things such as a 204. 205s for podiatry gets pretty tough to use because of some of the other requirements in the CPT book. But recommending and not even providing an orthotic is not reach the level of a 99204. So I do feel because of the code that was utilized, patient ended up over without having paid an adequate amount of money, and therefore she was sent to collection, and collection I felt was inappropriate, and therefore I would substantiate that there was overcharges in this exam, and that led to some of the complaints by the patient. If the guidelines were utilized that were appropriate, such as a 99202, And even with the x-rays, she probably would not have been outside the amount of the cost of what she had already put down as a down payment when she first went to the office, and would not have needed to proceed to be sent to collection. I'll just give a couple of brief answers, the responses in terms of the response, the supplement that Dr. Dershowitz and Ms. Kemp provided on August 27, 2020 concerning the billing. They do state they felt the billing codes were appropriate. They do present within that first paragraph, and they describe codes that they describe what's expected. They call it and those things are a comprehensive history, a comprehensive exam, and medical decision making of complexity. Those things, that list, it's exactly what I'm saying, that this was overcharged. This wasn't the comprehensive exam. It was a very basic exam, and it was also a very basic history. And as far as moderate complexity, recommending an orthotic, which is refused, and patient left the office and wasn't even given if it was really a severe condition, an AMA paper to sign, it wasn't complex. So he did not fit the guideline for using a 204, even as provided in the records from Ms. Kent. in that response. The billing consult time, yes, it's documented, but it's got to be remembered. Documentation of billing time is based on 50% of it before it becomes utilized. And it must be documented. There is no documentation of the extent of the visit and the amount of time that was utilized. So I don't think the time is a matter, is involved in this in any way. And as far as this goes, I do agree with Dr. Dershowitz and Ms. Kent that the time shouldn't be the only thing considered. So as far as the main issue, I felt overcharging was a problem, and it would be within this complaint and the fact that patient was charged and then sent to collections, which would have happened if the appropriate focus had been used. So I would substantiate that the patient was overcharged, that the records don't justify the coding that was utilized. Medically, the treatment was appropriate, but from a charging standpoint and record, they don't meet the standards. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Cohn. That was very comprehensive. Appreciate that very much. Just a caveat to board members, we have no jurisdiction when it comes to the business of collections and things, but that is a, you know, information point noted. So does anybody have any questions for Dr. Cohn? Dr. Ilano or Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for Dr. Cohn?
No, he answered everything I had a question about.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Rhodes, sir. Okay. Yes, I did not, have any. He actually discussed quite a few of my points. So now we have Dr. Dershowitz and Kimberly Kent on the line. So it's time we can have a summary from either Dr. Dershowitz or from Ms. Kent, whoever is going to speak. Now's your time.
Well, okay. So this is Dr. Dershowitz. So I want to clarify one thing that is not clear on the record. When Dr. Cohn was speaking of assessment, patient is to be sent for MRI, CT scan, etc. If you guys have in front of you the copy of the record, you see that line is underlined. Well, that was a glitch in the software system. So the words assessment, patient is to be sent, blah, 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 that was something that, had I chosen to do that, should have been clicked on, and it then would have populated. So that was something that was erroneously printed and not discussed with the patient. I had no intention of sending her for any of that further testing. And as far as a lot of the commentary by Dr. Cohn, I understand that he did not read Dr. Polakoff's report. And Ms. Kent asked that she be recused because she formerly worked for me several years ago. And I thought that was appropriate since she used to work for me. However, if you read her report, is somebody saying something? Hello?
No, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. Excuse me, I apologize. If we're going to bring in Dr. Polakoff's report through testimony, then we're going to bring in Dr. Polakoff's report, and we can review that as well.
Well, I just wanted to mention that she found no issue with my coding. That's all.
Pardon me, Dr. Dershowitz.
Excuse me.
Yes.
This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. You have now brought in the report that you did not want to be heard at this meeting.
No, and we'll ask that the record strike. Let me speak, please. This is Kimberly Kent. I'm going to ask that the record be stricken with regard to Dr. Dershowitz's comments.
Well, as this is an administrative hearing, we will not strike the record, and it will remain on. Thank you.
Oh, well, okay. I think it's one of the things that's difficult Dr. Campbell, is I'm not sitting next to Dr. Dershowitz, and I can't tell him. You can't bring that up.
Well,
so,
you could have discussed it probably with him beforehand. Pardon me, you could have discussed it with him beforehand that it, because this decision was made that you had asked that Dr. Polakoff be recused. I would have thought that would have been something that you had discussed prior to this, since you are his counsel. So Seamus is correct that's the format. If you bring it in, then it's, you know, and we're not going to go down that road. So we will continue with Dr. Dershowitz giving his summary. And then we will have questions for him. So I believe, Dr. Dershowitz, before you were talking about what we are not going to discuss, then proceed where you left off.
Okay, I understand. Okay. Sorry for the comment that I made. Obviously, I'm not an attorney. Did you all understand the line that I was explaining to you, that I had no intention to send her for an MRI, CT scan, or anything like that? That was a glitch in the software, and I don't think anywhere did the patient even express to Dr. Cohen that was something that I was intending on doing. So let's get back to the coding issue, because that appears to be, you know, the brunt of Dr. Cohen's issue with this particular patient. I spent a lot of time with her, more than the 5 or 10 minutes that I believe she told him. I never would have recommended a single orthotic unless a patient was an amputee. All of the podiatrists on the board understand that. And I spent a lot of time with her, as she professed to be a physical therapy assistant, in discussing her x-rays, in discussing the biomechanics of her situation that would warrant an orthotic, the fact that she had a prior ankle injury, the fact that she was an avid runner. This wasn't a 5 or 10 minute or even a 30 minute conversation, because as is reflected in the record, she was quite argumentative. You could see sort of my final comment, which is very rare for me at the bottom of a record, that I'm not reappointing her, because she wasn't interested in doing anything that I recommended to her. But as it turned out, it's precisely what she did. She didn't want to spend $480, which is our standard fee for orthotics, which is less than Access pays us. It's certainly not an overcharge for a pair of orthotics, custom orthotics. And so she obtained a pair on her own through a non-podiatrist who promotes himself to physical therapists, and he fabricates orthotics. I don't know what he does biomechanically to determine how to correct them, but he fabricates orthotics for patients. He used to run Mark Gorman's laboratory when Dr. Gorman was making orthotics, and then he broke off on his own. But I spent a lot of time with her discussing her x-rays. And when I did my own research, when I saw Dr. Cohn's commentary regarding this is not an appropriate level of coding, an 03 or an 04, time is merely a factor to be considered. If time was the only factor that I considered in determining the appropriate code, then I would have notated that. I would have notated the amount of time, and I would have notated that it comprised more than 50% of the visit. But it was merely a factor to be considered. And when I determined to bill for an 04 as opposed to an 03, I took into account all the time I spent with her, and she was literally arguing with me regarding how one should proceed, and should she do this, and should she do that. And, you know, I understood that I was dealing with somebody who professed to have knowledge beyond the typical layperson, because she told me that she was a physical therapy assistant and working in that type of practice. So I felt that I could discuss this with her in a more professional, technical, scientific way, and we did. And the reason I took both foot and ankle x-rays is because with the kind of complaints that she was describing, she could have sustained a stress fracture. She told me she had just run 40 miles in sand. So I felt that everything I had done was absolutely appropriate, and I typically for, you know, for a visit like this would have coded 03, but I intentionally coded it up to 04 because of all the time I spent with her and all of the technical information that was going back and forth between her and me. And I would also like to state for the record that because we are such a busy practice and we treat so many patients, I routinely am audited by all of the local players in town as well as all the Medicare Advantage companies, and they look at 20, 30, 50, 200 charts, and not once has anybody criticized or commented on inappropriate coding. So that's why I take particular umbrage at the criticism of the 04 when I know how much time I spent with her. It wasn't an hour, but it was certainly more than 30 minutes. And that's all I have to say.
Does anybody have any questions for Dr. Dershowitz? Dr. Foreman?
No, I don't.
Dr. Ilano?
No question.
Mr. Rhodes?
Dr. Campbell?
Yes.
Sorry. I was just going to clarify one thing, but I can wait.
Who's speaking? Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Foreman. Okay. Dr. Foreman, I mean. Okay.
One final thing I should probably parenthetically insert here. As far as turning her over to collections was concerned, we billed her insurance company. And certainly were abiding by and wanted her claim adjudicated by her insurance company. And as everything I did and as all of her charges went to an unmet deductible, that's why she was balance billed, because I'm obligated to do that legally. So I just wanted to point that out.
Well, I have some questions for you, Dr. Dershowitz, Dr. Campbell. Do you use in-house billing or external billing on your patients?
External billing.
External, okay. And so do you code your EM visits, or does your billing company do the coding?
I do it.
You do it, okay.
I complete a super bill and we scan it to the billing people.
Okay.
And they have access to my records and they check one against the other and then they send out the bills.
Okay. Now, in regards to the x-rays, and you were talking about the reasoning behind taking the ankles was because of the chance of a stress fracture, which I think is true. The other thing I noticed, though, and you didn't make a comment, I noticed it looks like maybe a unicameral bone cyst in the talus, and you always think of, you know, if there had been any kind of osteochondral or Taylor dome issues, but that wasn't mentioned as a possibility in a differential diagnosis. And the patient indicated that there was an x-ray that had been done at SMILE on 9/9/19. Did you ask about that x-ray? Did you ask, had there been any prior imaging done?
I don't think she had had she mentioned to me, I would have included it in my records, but I'm not aware that she had prior x-rays, and certainly if we had access to it, I wouldn't have needed to take my own.
Okay. That was, you know, and that's why I said, you know, there's
when,
some,
when,
pardon
yeah.
me? I think there's, you know.
No, I was going to say. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I don't have anything to say. I'll listen to you.
Thank you. There, you know, because we get the inconsistencies, or he said, she said. So this is why I wanted to ask that question. And I do have my comments I'd like to make regarding your selection of the 99204, because I am in agreement with Dr. Cohn that is not an appropriate level. Asking someone specific questions is not, you know, the level of specificity is not in the guidelines or bullet point breakdown of how you select codes. You did not have vitals noted. There's no height, no weight, no BMI, temp, blood pressure, respiration. There is no general description of a patient's general health. That's part of that bullet point level, you know, no statement saying, you know, well, we've got a 50-year-old white female, well-groomed, well-nourished, and no acute distress, articulate, awake, you know, alert and oriented times three, et cetera, et cetera. chief complaint is minimal. And again, now this may be a he said, she said, because I don't see any recording in the HPI there of aggravating factors. And she's saying, and in a document presented by Ms. Kent, comparing your notes to what the patient said, you know, the patient is saying, you know, I did these exercises and they were bothering me, so I quit. And so these kind of things weren't listed, which I would have hoped to see, because that makes a more complete note, which would have certainly been more of an indication of substantiation of your level of selection for service on the patient. The allergy to the penicillin is not described. The ibuprofen is there, but no dosage. And I know Ms. Kent made a remark in a submission that, well, it was in the initial intake form. Well, it should also be present in that initial office visit, because if somebody else is going to pick up that chart, most of the time they're not going to be looking at that back thing. They're going to be at that initial intake. They're going to be looking at your initial office visit. Review of systems. A lot of those components are deferred. So then that doesn't meet the bullet points. You know, the discrepancy in the musculoskeletal, which Dr. Cohen talked about too, about the dorsiflexion is normal, but then you have a diagnosis of gastric equinus. And you just explained to us about, you know, my question on the vascular and why would you send some for a test, but then you've explained to us that was a glitch in your computer system. So, you know, these levels of services require counseling and coordination of care with other providers. Well, that did not occur either. So, you know, these are my responses and my reasonings why I do not agree with use that 99204 was the appropriate level to select. Back to, there's no mention, is this patient a smoker? And tobacco, you know, that's another very important history question that was not on that, which would be, again, part of the bullet points. I noticed, too, when you're discussing about you made the decision not to reappoint the patient. So, and you said it was because she was not responsive to the offers of care that you presented to her. So, to me, this sounds like you discharged the patient from your practice. Would you say that is true?
Well, she told me that she had no intention of coming back to see me.
Okay. So what I'm trying to ascertain was, you know, if you had decided that you were, you know, you were dismissing her, then I would have been expecting to see an appropriate method of dismissal, like, you know, presenting a formal letter and giving, you know, 30 days of emergency care. So thank you for clarifying that she said she had no intention. So
right.
That would be, you know, again, we've all reiterated, I think, the same kind of concerns here with the use of that, you know, 99204. And, you know, that I think in this respect, this, in my opinion, this is a serious thing, because, you know, again, you mentioned that you've never had an issue from all the insurance companies you deal with, but, you know, the insurance company does not license you. We, the State Board of Podiatry Examiners, license you, and it is on our due diligence to look at these issues. So in my opinion, I would like to make a motion to file a letter of concern for case 20-01-C regarding proper documentation and elements required for the use of the E&M code, particularly number 99204. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Do we have any other discussion?
I second.
Do my board members have any other discussion?
Dr. Campbell? No. Dr. Campbell, would I be able to at least make a statement on behalf of the doctor?
No, not at this time. No, not at all. So we will take a vote on this motion. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. And Heather will be sending out that letter to you, Dr. Dershowitz, and to Ms. Kent. Thank you very much for your participation.
Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome. And we have one more case here on our investigation files. This is with Dr. Woodward. And this is case number 20-13-C. And Heather is going to go ahead and give the review on that case, since it's more of an administrative kind of question.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, board members. This complaint was submitted by a podiatrist, Dr. Sina Safar, and Dr. Safar alleges that Dr. Woodward has been treating his patients without consent. Dr. Safar alleges that Dr. Woodward treats Dr. Safar's patients prior to Dr. Safar's regularly scheduled appointments with his patients, and that causes billing issues. Dr. Safar states that Dr. Woodward claims to have referrals from hospice to treat the patients in question. Dr. Safar indicates that the majority of the patients in question are not in hospice care. Additionally, Dr. Safar indicates that the power of attorneys for the patients have not given consent to Dr. Woodward. So Dr. Woodward did provide a response in a timely manner, and he refuted all of the allegations. Dr. Woodward explained that some of the patients he sees are in hospice care, and that hospice obtains consent from the power of attorney or the guardian, and then hospice makes the referral for the health professional to see the patient. Dr. Woodward states that patients he sees that are not in hospice care are in group homes, and it's the same for the group home. The home obtains consent from the power of attorney or the guardian and then makes the referral to the health professional. And then Dr. Woodward states that if the patient is not under hospice care or in a group home, then he will obtain consent directly from the patient. So that concludes my summary, and neither Dr. Woodward nor Dr. Safar are present.
Dr. Foreman or Dr. Yolanda, do you have any questions for Heather?
No, could we make a motion to dismiss this case? Can I make a motion?
Thank you. Do we have a second? Mr. Rhodes has seconded the motion. Do we have any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Thank you. All right. Okay, next category here. We move on to B, which is our issuance of licenses. First one is Dr. Naresh Dugal. One second here. Looks like everything is in, the application is complete and fees paid. So I will make a motion Dr. Dugal has applied for his regular podiatry license. His application is complete. Fee paid. I'll make a motion to accept Dr. Dugal's application for a license to practice podiatry and issue the license upon payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Any discussion? Any discussion?
No.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Our next is Rosabelle Loya. Dr. Loya has everything applied for a regular license. Everything is complete and the fee paid. So I will make a motion to accept Dr. Loya's application for license to practice podiatry and issue the license upon payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion?
No.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. All right, now we'll move on to C, which is the application for registration to dispense drugs and devices. We have two applicants. We have Dr. Candace Cooper, and she has everything complete within her application. So I will, and fees paid, so I will make a motion to accept Dr. Cooper's initial application to dispense drugs and devices.
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. So moved. Our next is Dr. Scott Walker. Again, his application is initial for the dispensing is complete. Fee is paid. So I will make a motion to accept Dr. Walker's initial application to dispense drugs and devices.
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. All right, now we've got some renewal applications here with this dispensing registration included. The first is Dr. Shai. How does she say that, Heather?
I believe it's Dr. Shailaja Arya.
Arya, okay. Now, doctor is requesting a waiver for the late fee on her license renewal, which was received on August the 14th. We as a board really do not have the statutory, we don't have the statutory right to waive late fees. You are correct.
Exactly.
You are correct. So that is the, but everything else she's got is correct, isn't it, Heather? Everything is complete.
That's correct. And she did submit the late fee, and her renewal was administratively complete. So I did renew her license. And in the event that the board would waive the fee, then I would just refund it.
So in all these cases, we're not allowed to take off the late fee?
No, not unless if you do it for one, you have to do it for all. But like I said,
right,
it's not in statute. We have no statute that allows us to waive fees. So she does have her license. She's just asking for the waiver. So we'll just send her. Do we have to have a motion that says we will not waive the fee?
Yeah, you should.
Okay. So any other questions or discussions on this? So then I will make a motion to inform the doctor that the late fee will not be waived.
As
per statute.
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. Our next is Ariza Izzad. Requesting extension of the deadline for CME certification. The doctor has the CME, but has not received the certificate yet, because I guess, you know, people are behind on sending out certificates because of the pandemic. Anyway, so, you know, that's something that she really is out of her control. So I would just make a motion to approve her CME upon receipt of the certificate. Correct? Isn't that what we were?
Seconded.
Approve her renewal upon.
Approve her. My getting dry in my mouth here. Well, that we would approve her renewal application upon receipt of the CME certificate.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. Next is Dr. Cameron McKay. Dr. McKay is in China, teaching at a school in China. He's a legitimate waiver request for CME because he is out of continental United States. So I would make, do anybody have any questions on that? So I will make a motion to accept and grant a waiver of CME for Dr. Cameron McKay.
Per board statute.
Per board statute. Number 32-829, heading C.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. So we have a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Next is Dr. Glenn Silverstein. He's also requesting a waiver of late fee on his renewal. Did you guys read all the emails? Or Heather, you want to give a quick synopsis of what occurred?
Yes, thank you. Dr. Silverstein, I've had many conversations with him, and for some reason, when the renewal reminders and the emails were sent, his was sent to the incorrect email and address, and it was a glitch. I run the reports, I merge it, but as I stated to Dr. Silverstein, the board is not required to send out renewal reminders. It is a courtesy provided by the board. And you can see on his renewal, in the emails that are attached to his renewal, the e-license system does send out renewal reminders, and it was sent to him, and he does acknowledge that there was an email reminder sent to him on August 1st. And if you look at, let me get to the page. There was also one sent on July 1st to that same email address. So with that, his renewal is complete. So he was, his license was renewed. So the only thing before the board is whether or not the board would grant his request for the fee waiver. So you can see it's on page 765 of the materials. Where you can see that the system did send a reminder email to him on July 2nd to the correct email address. And that was a 60-day reminder.
Thank you, Heather. So again, it just goes back to the same thing. We do not have the statutory authority to waive the late fee. So I will make a motion to deny waiver of late fee for Dr. Glenn Silverstein as per statutory guidelines.
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. I'm sorry, I forgot. Dr. Schabler, Jeffrey Schabler, number 4. He is... asking for an extension to complete his CMEs because of going to Midwestern that was canceled and rescheduled.
He's also requesting a waiver of the late fee.
Of the late fee, too. Right. Okay. I have a question, Heather. Okay. He didn't answer the questions on the drugs and devices, and there's no DEA in there either.
From conversations I've had with him, he's not requesting to renew that, and he doesn't have a DEA license.
But he's wanting to come out here and practice. But that fell through.
If he can find a practice to purchase.
He's going to have to get those items. Okay. Okay, so he's asking for the extension and then the late fee. Okay, so again, we can't statutorily waive the late fee, but we can obviously, if we want to extend his deadline. So the conference is scheduled on the 28th through the 31st of October.
And
he didn't have any other courses that he had taken or ability to take anything online prior.
I don't know. That's not a conversation that I had with him, but I do know because of the current health crisis, some states may be waiving CME requirements.
That's true, too.
So I just don't know the answer to that question. But if the board did grant him the 60-day deadline, it would be from, the board approval date, which would be today, so he could meet that 60-day if he went to that conference.
What do you guys feel about that? You okay?
I mean, as long as it doesn't keep happening, I'm okay with it.
Only get one.
This is a one-time deal, yeah. So hopefully that can be relayed to people on those extensions. So, okay, so then I will make a motion to deny the request for waiver of the late penalty application fee due to statutory regulation. And I would also, in addition, that we would extend, would accept the request for a CME deadline extension to 10/31 of 2020.
Second it.
Second. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. So moved. Okay, and one last one is Dr. Leonard Wagner over in California. He asked for a CME waiver request, but because he said, you know, that he was, I don't know if he's, if they've waived CMEs in California, so that he didn't have any from California, but he's asking for that. But I think it would be more appropriate that it not be a waiver request, because he does not meet the guidelines, unless he would claim disability, but that was not in any of the emails, so that an extension would be more in line for this doctor.
Yes, I would think just an extension.
Okay, so what was the date of his, that he requested that, Heather? So should we should be making it the same time frame as the other doctor then?
Yeah, it's from the day that the board approves.
Okay. Okay, so I will then make a motion to grant or to accept a request for extension on completing continuing medical education for this renewal cycle for Dr. Leonard Wagner.
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Thank you very much. All right. Let me go back to, let's do the minutes and then we can finish up with legislation and Heather's items. So back on, we have, that's number four, August the 12th, 2020, the general session minutes. I did see when there's the discussion of the CME request from Dr. Dancho. He's not at Midwestern, but at the Tucson VA residency program. Anybody else have any corrections or additions?
I didn't see any.
Okay, so I will make a motion to accept the general session minutes from meeting August 12th, 2020, as with corrections.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Then B, the executive session minutes from August 12, 2020. I did not see any issues. And did anybody else have any concerns or additions or corrections?
I didn't have any.
Okay, seeing none, I will make a motion to accept our executive session minutes from August the 12th, 2020 as written.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? Seeing none, we'll take our vote. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Thank you very much. All right, so we have the back to 5E, which is the legislation that the board for the 2021 legislative session. So, Heather.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, board members. This item is on the agenda just to see if the board wishes to run legislation. As the board is aware, the board did run legislation during the 2020 session, but it was stalled due to the pandemic. All non-essential bills were stalled. So I've spoken with the legislative staff, and from what I understand, the bill will just be reopened by the Senate Health Chair. But if that is not the case, then I would need direction from the board whether or not it wishes to run that same legislation, and I did attach a draft of the legislation, and the draft that I attached is where it was left off this last session. If the board wishes to run legislation, I would recommend one change regarding the fingerprinting section, and it's just to update the language a little bit. Just speaking with some of my counterparts, and it would just be more specific to accepting a fingerprint clearance card instead of having the language regarding the full background check. And it does streamline the process. If you have to go through the Department of Public Safety, it's more cumbersome for the board and for the applicant.
And this is what the other boards do?
Yeah, concerning the fingerprinting, so the language that, and I took this language from some of the other agencies that were running fingerprinting legislation last session. It would say an applicant for original licensure, license renewal, license reinstatement, or temporary licensure shall possess a valid fingerprint clearance card issued pursuant to Title 41, Chapter 12, Article 3.1. And it would be an effective date of like January 1st, 2022, because the legislation wouldn't even become effective until mid, you know, as late as September 1st of 2021. But otherwise, you know, as the legislation was going through, there were no concerns with the draft that you see in front of you now.
I do have a question. Why aren't podiatrists allowed to do, if we take a class, why aren't we allowed to do nitrous oxide? We are not allowed to do any other kind of local, anything but local, if we can get certified for...
You mean like nitrous in some of the ones?
Yeah, because I mean there are cosmetics cosmetologists doing it, and I'm just wondering why we can't, if we get, you know, certified for, do it ourselves.
So,
because I read that in there, and that's the question I had with after I read it.
Madam Chair, if I may, if the board wanted to run legislation of that nature, I would recommend that we do that not in 2021 but 2022, and we would conduct some research, we would talk to the association, maybe get the association on board. That would take a lot more work because it's considered expanding the scope of practice.
Okay.
So we can always put that, you know, maybe start talking about that early next year.
Okay. Barbara, do you know why that language was put in there originally, that we're not allowed to do anything else?
Well, you know what? That's been in there since I was first licensed. That's, I think, you know, and that's one of the big things about, you know, that why we're doing and looking at these statutes and these, you know, everything is, they're outdated. They haven't been, they didn't go with the times. So that's, yeah, that's why we're doing this. So with what, you know, the other things too that Heather said about the fingerprinting, and I just want to be sure too that we had a big discussion about this, you know, the stuff about the H&Ps, and I just want to be sure that we like that wording we put in there about in the definition of a podiatrist. Let me pull it up here. That we say, okay, number 9, the podiatrist is synonymous with podiatric physician and surgeon and means a person who within the limits of this chapter is registered and licensed to practice podiatry by means of performing full body physical examinations within the profession's scope of practice and diagnosing or medically, surgically, mechanically, manipulative, or electrically treating ailments of the human foot and leg, but not amputation of the entire foot or leg, or leg or entire foot, or administration of the anesthetic other than local. So what I'm asking is, I want to make sure that we like that wording about the scope, and hoping that that allows us interpretation per case and it's not confusing to people. So that's why I bring that up again.
I mean, it says entire foot, so I think that's That's good.
Yes, right. And that was the wording that was done after the amputation law became effective, that change in the definition. But I'm talking about since we've had issues with performance of inappropriate portions of, you know, of examination, full body exams, and we've had, you know, so many of the, you know, again, younger practitioners and people asking, can they perform, you know, full body histories and physicals? So that's why I said I want to make sure that we're, you know, that we have that wording.
The scope of our...
Pardon?
It does say within our scope of practice, so I don't think we can word it any differently.
Okay, well, that's because I wanted just to, we had done some, you know, research before, but the way they, this is how they read it in New Mexico. But again, like I said, I just want us to be sure and in total agreement that we feel that this, you know, explains it. And as Heather mentioned, we didn't have any flack on that description when we went to the committee, but the way they say it in New Mexico is general full body physical exams are within the scope of practice as long as a physical exam has a direct connection or association to the lower extremity condition. So, okay, I just, like I said, I want to be sure we got to have all our I's dotted and T's crossed. And, you know, there's always a chance that they aren't going to like the wording anyway. That could get changed. So, okay, I just wanted to be sure we're all on the same page and with the same agreement on everything. So, all right. Anybody else have any comments or concerns about the legislative stuff?
No.
Okay, cool.
So if I can just get some clarification. So if the bill is not reopened, which if it is, I'm assuming it would have a different bill number, but if it's not reopened, then the board does want to find a sponsor to run legislation in 2021.
Yeah.
So I have clear direction. Okay. Thank you.
Yes, definitely. So, oh, goodness. Heather's executive director's report.
So this is pretty short. Renewals are pretty much complete. We had the few on the agenda today. With everything going on, it went very well, I thought, better than expected. And with the sunset audit, I did submit the response at the board's direction at its last meeting. And I've not heard anything yet, but I will keep the board apprised. With the budget, there's been a lot of turnover at Central Services Bureau, so I don't have a current budget, but I did attach the fiscal year 2022 budget that was submitted to the governor's office on September 1st, so if you have any questions about that. And then I attached the complaint log, and no new complaints were added since I sent materials.
Thank you, Heather. So anybody have any questions for Heather? All right.
Nope.
So do we have any summary of current events? All righty, saying we don't have anything there. And we have a call to the public. We have no public to call. Forgot if this is the place. And congratulations to Mr. Rhodes on his 50th wedding anniversary.
Hey, nice job.
Congratulations.
Okay, anybody have any on number 9, discussion of possible action for future agenda items? Anybody have anything they'd like to see on the agenda for discussion? All right. Well, if you do, you can always send to Heather. Our next meeting is Wednesday, October 21st. 2020 in this board meeting room?
Yes, and if we can also discuss the November meeting date.
Please.
The November, I have it booked, the room booked for either November 10th, which is a Tuesday, or November 17th, which is a Tuesday, and that is because November 11th is a Wednesday and it's Veterans Day. So those, the board office is closed on November 11th, that second Wednesday. So the rooms got booked up really quickly, so I could only get it for Tuesday. So I don't know if the board wants to have a meeting on November 10th, the day before Veterans Day, it would be the second Tuesday, or if they would prefer to have it on November 17th, which is the third Tuesday of November.
It's the third Tuesday instead? Okay, how would that, I mean, what's going to be the best as far as time frames with complaints and you know, if we have things going that, you know, when we have to follow?
It's only a week
so
difference.
We're okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's only a week difference. So it's really the board's preference, what works with board member schedules.
So what works, I mean, for, what do you guys think? You know, yeah, that's kind of how I am. So are you two guys, you know, what do you think with, you know, as far as your patient schedules and stuff?
Work for me. This is Dr. Ilano. So we, if we can push it back to next week.
What was that, guys? I didn't hear. We're kind of fading out here or something. So it works better
November
for you to do the next week, Albert?
Wednesdays work for me. So November 17th would work for me instead of the 10th on a Tuesday.
That would work better for me, too.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so it'll be on November 17th. Okay, thank you.
Okay, let me put that on. Okay, so our next meeting will
be... Oh, sure, thank you.
Okay, so that will be the November meeting will be November 17th. Okay, so, but we'll re-announce that next month.
And then
month,
the 14th.
So.
Is,
okay, so...
October 14th, right?
Actually, it's the 21st because there was an issue with rooms that month as well.
Right.
So it's the third Wednesday instead of the second Wednesday.
Okay.
All righty. So we're all set on, got our meeting dates set up and knowing where we are. Okay. So at 12:15, I will make a motion to adjourn the meeting, seeing that we've completed everything, unless somebody has something else they wanted to talk about and didn't mention. All right. Last chance. Okay. All in favor? Do I have a second?
Aye.
Okay. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Thanks, guys, for a good meeting. I know this is a real challenge to do this stuff telephonically.
Yeah.